Good evening, and welcome to our first meeting of 2010. It is January 11th, and we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence, if I can have silence up here. I'd like to dedicate the moment of silence tonight to two people, Bob Young, who is a delightful citizen and writer and friend, and also a former city councilwoman, Jean Hofstede, who was a city councilwoman and served in the Navy during World War II. So I wanted to dedicate our moment of silence to those two people this evening. Thank you. And for our pledge tonight, we have Dylan Wade, our city engineer, going to lead us.
Please stand. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under
its representation, if we don't get everybody counted. So please pass the word. It's really important to be counted. This is not something that all the information is confidential. It's not going to be used against you, but every person who's counted indicates $1,000 per year of federal funding money for our area for health and human services program and education and infrastructure projects. So it is just so important that you do be counted and get a correct count of the people in your household. There's only 10 questions on the form, and it takes 10 minutes to complete. Now, having said how important it is, you also need to be careful, because unfortunately there are scam artists out there, and they're going to use this as a way to get some scams going. So the way to tell the difference between a census worker and a con artist is the census worker will have a badge, a handheld device, and a Census Bureau canvas bag, and a confidentiality notice. You can ask to see identification. You should. Don't give them any personal financial information. They're not supposed to ask that. Social Security number, nothing. Just how many people live in your household. That's all they're looking for. So please do be careful, but please do get counted and spread the word to everybody you know, because it's so vitally important, especially to this state in these financial times. Also, we have coming up this weekend our 14th annual Winter Bird Festival. So you're going to see a whole bunch of birders out there with their scopes, hopefully looking for birds, and hopefully it's not going to be raining, except at night. We'll let it rain at night. We do have, right in this building on Saturday, Pacific Wildlife Care is going to be giving some presentations that are open to the public. Very inexpensive, $2 for adults, $1 for children, and they bring various raptors and critters and talk about them and what they do to save them and put them back in the wild or keep them if they can't be released. It's a fascinating program. Bring the kids. It's a great family activity, and that's this Saturday. The first show is at 1, there's another at 2:30, and another at 4 o'clock. And we will have a vendor area over at the community center where we have all kinds of birding equipment and artwork and lots of stuff, and that also is open to the public. So hopefully we'll see some of you there with all the birders. That's it for my announcements. Betty?
A couple of announcements. One regarding Morro Bay being in a county magazine again a couple of months ago. Right across the street, many of you may know Chris, who does dog walking, and she for over a decade had a dog named Abby, who ended up being a three-legged dog and was seen around town many times. And they got themselves in the local for us seniors, no longer called the senior, but the Journal Plus magazine for the county. And subsequently, Abby, being older, did pass away a couple of months ago. But I just thought it was nice to have a story from Morro Bay in the county magazine again. And then my last announcement is from the Water Resources Advisory Committee for the county. We had a full morning workshop last week, and Mr. Wade was there as well as I, and talked about our local plan and how it fits with the county plan. Got some information on in the afternoon at our regular meeting. Some people referenced some articles that we'll be talking about later that Mr. Grantham's brought up about pharmaceuticals in the water.
The Airport Land Use Commission in favor of creating the homeless center in areas that they oversee. So We will be, I believe that's going to be February 11th at the county chambers at 1 o'clock. And just one other thing, the warming station at Prado Daycare Center is always looking for volunteers. When there's a certain amount of rain over a sustained period, the warming stations are opened up for the homeless. As also when temperature drops for a certain number of hours in a row, the warming station is open. So if you're looking to volunteer any of your time for this, you can call 788-0617, the Prado Daycare Center, and get put on a list to be called if they need someone to oversee a certain time slot. That would be a great way to donate some time. And that's all I have.
Okay. May I ask a question of his announcement? Mm-hmm. Do you need people to go to the meeting before the report committee as to lobby or no?
Well, actually, Betty, I was going to expound on that more at the next meeting, but anybody that's against homelessness should show up and state that they're against homelessness and that they do support the Center for the Homeless. This center is going to be by Department of Social Services, and what we're trying to do is put everything in one place, like a nonstop little campus, so people can get their benefits that they have coming to them and get what help they need, and for families and single folks, young and old. Mm-hmm. And so I will be talking about that again at the meeting later on in the month and give you the exact address and the time. The more people there, of course, the better.
Noah?
Yeah, good evening. I would like to give you guys an update about our subcommittee for the Downtown Visioning Project. We had a meeting with Mr. Ambo and Ms. Luker and the Cal Poly team, as well as our subcommittee members, Mr. Diodati and Lur. And we had a good meeting, talked about the focus of the project and the timeline of the project, and it's looking like we'll be kicking it off officially with a community meeting in early April. We're still formulating the basic concept of that meeting, but we are going to be doing some outreach between now and then to make sure that businesses, residents, and property owners that would like to be involved have that chance. So between now and then, if you're interested, Mr. Lur is our chairperson for the committee, but you can also contact me at 772-7668. If you'd like to get involved and be notified about different efforts within this project, which is focused in the downtown corridor. So look forward to updating you more as we move forward.
Okay. Carla?
Good evening. Thank you. I have just a few reminders. The advisory board applications are being accepted right now for all our different positions in the city. So anybody who's interested in Parks and Recs or P. Webb or some of the others, please make sure you get your applications in. The 29th and 30th of this month, the Morro Bay High School every year hosts a wrestling tournament. They call it CIT, California Invitational Tournament. And there's usually about 40, 50 teams that participate. So that'll be going on in a few weeks, and it'll be available to our district. And then lastly, on February 29th, the Morro Bay Grange Hall is holding a spaghetti feed. It's an all-you-can-eat dinner for $8. There are family tickets available and kids' tickets. You can eat in or dine out. And unfortunately, I left Tammy Haas's phone number at home, which is listed in the phone book, where you can call me if you're interested in tickets.
Excuse me. Again, is it a fundraiser or just...
Yes, it is. It's that evening we'll be doing the spaghetti feed, and we also have raffle tickets, and the proceeds from that 100% are going for scholarships for the Morro Bay High School.
And what's the date on that again?
February 29th.
Okay.
Morro Bay Grange Hall.
Okay. Staff reports. Harbor.
I'm sorry, January 29th.
January 29th. Okay. Do we have a report from Harbor? No. Okay. Rec and Parks. Joe.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I've got a few things to discuss this evening. Right now it's the beginning of the calendar year, and we've just finished up annual renovation at the Morro Bay Community Center, and we are still finishing up the Veterans Hall. We've been here about a week. If you notice when you came in, I don't think there's a sign up. It's down being painted. We've got some different lighting. We've done the planter out front. We've torn out a lot of the old vegetation and replaced it. So a little revamping of the landscaping here, as well as some inside maintenance. The crew will be going into other projects in other departments the next month, and starting in public restrooms February and March. And we'll have a more detailed report on our annual renovation on public restrooms at the Recreation and Parks Commission February the 5th. I believe our next meeting is the first Thursday of February. The Teen Advisory Committee met last week. It was a teens-only meeting. We had about 15 young folks showed up to discuss the future of the Teen Advisory Committee. It will reopen to the full committee, which includes adults, parents, and others that are interested in February. And at our website, you'll be able to find the exact date and time when that's going to be. And last but not least, the skate park has been moved to the teen center, and the old skate park will be starting to take it apart tomorrow. And we have portions of the skate park going to be reused by the YMCA down in Santa Maria. We've got an agreement with them, and we still have a few more pieces that we're going to be liquidating. That'll all start tomorrow. Okay. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Noah, you had a question?
Yeah, Mr. Woods, I wanted to follow up with the Rec and Parks Commission meeting. Thank you for mentioning that. There has been a fair amount of interest from the public about the bathrooms, specifically the showers at the Rock. And so it was the 4th, I believe, the Thursday, February
That's 4th,
yes. that meeting would take place, and talking about the bathrooms, but the showers would be included in that conversation. And besides that, I have heard some really great feedback so far about the skate park and the new location, and the ability for families to utilize it without direct supervision. So, so far, it sounds like we've done a really good job adjusting that.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Our public services. Bruce?
Hey, Mayor and Council, I can give you a real quick update. We funded our very first mobile home conversion, affordable conversion.
Items. The first item was personnel issues. This was related to the reorganization of the city maintenance area. The other item that was discussed in closed session was real property transactions. The property discussed was lease site 8686W and 801 Embarcadero. As to both these items, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Okay. And with that, we'll begin our public comment portion of the meeting. Anyone wishing to speak, please come forward and limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Good evening and Happy New Year to you guys. I'm here about a number of things. First, I'm here about the tank farm that is still standing and no action that anybody in town seems to know about has gone on. I brought the lease here. I hope that you've all read the lease. It's one paragraph. It says tank farm demolition, the revived AFC, and the CEC licensing condition provides Duke will demolish and remove the tank farm in the event that in the event Duke does not reach the new plant construction commencement date by September 1st, 2009, and Duke continues to operate the existing plant, Duke agrees to complete tank farm removal as identified in the revived AFC, subject to the grant of all needed permits and approval on reasonable terms and conditions. Pretty simple. Here we are. We're in January now. I was here, I believe, March of last year, asking about this, and I was told that it was on track. Well, it doesn't seem to be on track to me. We didn't get very much in this. We got some money, but our environment's taking a beating. And, you know, I understand that we're talking to Dynegy about letting them stay there till 2015. This lease goes till 2012. They're not abiding by the lease. I think we should cancel the lease now and shut them down. All the proof's in. This plant is not needed for the grid as per the state water board study that shows who's needed and who's not. Morro Bay's not needed. We're killing the estuary. Everybody knows it, and we're willing to take more money and let them kill it for some more time. Well, I say if they don't go along with this lease, and I urge all of you to look up Dynegy online in San Diego and see what they're doing to the city of Chula Vista down there. Their council and mayor are standing up to them, and they're still jerking them around, and they're stalling their redevelopment issues down there. And again, because of their lobbying power, they can get CAISO to say that that plant's needed when all evidence shows that it's not. And that's the kind of game we're playing here. But Morro Bay, it's in writing that Morro Bay is not needed for grid reliability. So let's not let them kill the estuary any longer. Simple as that. The other thing I want to talk about is the sewer plant. Now, I was involved in the early sewer days, but I haven't been keeping up with it because I'm chasing OTC to stop the dangerous practice of destroying our...
...that a series of articles is now appearing in the Slow Coast Journal, which can be found at www.slocoastjournal.com, that seeks to answer the question, whatever happened to the new Morro Bay power plant that was planned to replace the existing plant? I think a lot of people have asked that question, and there really hasn't been an answer of any kind until now. Yes, lots of speculation, but the articles I have written aim at providing answers based on facts, many of which have not been made available to the public before. No one could disagree with the conclusions I reach, but in order to do so, they would have to address those facts that lie beneath. It is a fascinating story in itself, more fascinating than I even realized at the time I was living through it over the past 10 years, and still am. The fascination comes from all the facts, reports, briefs, testimony, and experiences behind the scenes being put together into a whole. It turns out that the whole is bigger than the sum of the parts, at least as a means of gaining an understanding about what went on and why a new plant was never built. There are many surprises in the story, and there are a few more coming in the article that will be posted on February 1st in the journal on my reflections about the whole saga. I invite everyone who is interested in our community to read the articles. I think a lot can be learned from them about the city, the people in the community, the corporation that sought to build a new plant, the state regulators who were involved, and what a new plant, as it was proposed, would have meant to Morro Bay, which may be another surprise. Again, the articles are at www.slowcoastjournal.com. You can also read Janice Peters in the same site. They are my own doing, these articles, and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of the Coast Alliance and Plan Expansion Cape. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mike Burton, and tonight I'd like to speak on a little bit of a lighter note. I'm the current president of Central Coast Little League, and this is for the kids of Morro Bay, Cayucas, and Cambria area. And I just wanted to get out that our signups are going to be this Wednesday evening from 6 to 8 at the Morro Bay Community Center, and next Wednesday evening, the 20th, at the Morro Bay Community Center, same time, 6 to 8. Also, the Saturday morning at the basketball tournament or the basketball games at the old gym in the high school, we're going to have signups there. From 9 in the morning till about 11 or noon. This is for kids from the ages of 6 years old through 14. And also, if there's any people in the community that have time to donate, we need umpires, any kind of parents, team parents, people to help out with many, many facets, anything from the snack bar to just helping kids out on the practice field. So one more thing I'd like to thank the Del Mar Elementary School. They gave a very generous donation last year for some scholarships, and it's going to help out a great deal of kids in the Morro Bay area. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Noah, you had a comment?
Yeah, I would like to update the public and Mr. Nelson regarding our future agenda items on the 25th of January. We have agendized a discussion about water reclamation and recycling options, as well as...
Working with the school district, met with a representative of them. He happens to be a member of the Sierra Club, so I went and visited with them to get some questions asked, and so he's taking those questions back to Solar Rec, and hopefully we'll get some more detail about what's going on and how that's going to work or not work. I know people have asked me, and so I wanted to put that out there.
And Rob, did you want to respond to the tank farm comment?
Yes, as the citizen mentioned and read the clause in the agreement says that if they do not reach the new plant construction date, then the tank farm has to be removed. That was the first, if they did not reach it by September 1st. We know they have not reached that by September 1st. That was not the date that the tank farm had to be removed. They have a reasonable time after that since they didn't reach the date. They've told us that it's going to come down after the rains this spring. They have all their permits finally. It was difficult for them to obtain the permits and separate that out of the project component because, remember, we weren't the permitting agency for the demolition, so they had to have that separated out. But all go, and what they say is it's coming down after the rainy season. But I've got a note to confirm that up again, that they're still on schedule because I haven't talked to them probably since November.
Okay, so. Thank you. All right, we're moving right along. Let's go to the consent agenda. And did anyone want to pull anything? I'm going to pull A1.
I'd like to pull A2 and A3.
Okay.
Pull A5.
And I'll pull 4.
Okay, glad we have a lot of time to go over this one. Okay, so that's everything. The reason I pulled A1, Betty, it's actually for you. Page 16 of the minutes, we were talking about the parking amounts, and the motion was to reduce it to 4,000 per space, and your comment was you'd approve 2,000 per space. I think it was 20,000, was it not? Or something. It wasn't 2.
Yeah, I was going to, thank you, speak to both of those. On page 16, there's a Council Winholt's comment at the very bottom, and then there's one a couple of sentences up above that. The one at the very bottom, I went back and listened to that, and what I was saying was that we could knock it down by a couple of thousand.
Okay,
knock
reduce it, down it by 2,000, to reduce not it. Put
and
it
so,
at 2,000.
Yeah, so I'd like to propose that we amend this and change the word approve to take away.
How about she would approve reducing the amount by 2,000?
Reducing is a fine word also.
Okay.
Reducing by.
Okay.
And then on the one above, Councilman states she is not willing to reduce the fee by. It was to 2,000. So the word BY should be changed to TO.
Okay.
And then a third comment back on page 8. Under this motion, number 2 states, and forward to the Public Works Advisory Board for their consideration, but it's not clear what we're forwarding to them, so I'd like to add this language, if I might, forward to the PWAB for their consideration, and this is the new part, discussion on the Dial-A-Rite future.
For the Joint Planning Commission versus the fifth Monday in November. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what we want to decide on that.
I was in favor of that adjustment. That would make it November 15th and March 15th.
Okay. Anyone else have any problems with that?
I had considered the 22nd, the one before Thanksgiving, but I'm fine with the 15th.
Okay.
So 15th on November and March.
And that was my only change. So I'll move to approve A2.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None.
Okay. With changes, I should say.
Yeah, with changes. We assumed that. Okay, and A3, Carla.
A3, I have some questions. I guess I wanted to be able to bring this for the grant program funds for the Teen Center Master Plan. And unfortunately, I didn't get to Mr. Woods earlier, but I just have some concerns about the timeline in the back and what the potential would be under the resolution page 1, 2, and 4 about the funding source, having sufficient funds to complete the project. And so I'm concerned about, and I guess I want more information on how that's going to work from Mr. Woods if we don't have all the grant money to cover the costs.
Good evening, and thank you. The project, if we were to go forward and actually get awarded the funds, and right now I think we're going to be close to $1.5 million, maybe more as we adjust this, because these numbers are, as Council Winholtz said earlier, they're dated 05 or 06. So we'll be adjusting that. The amount of money that comes in, if there's awarded, then it's 100%. Hopefully we'll get 100% to cover the project before we start. So you're not obligated to have this. The resolution is that you have sufficient funds prior to starting any construction on this project. So we wouldn't start the project unless it was fully funded. The grant monies are non-matching funds, so we'd be seeking 100%. We may come back to you and add a few more dollars to the amount to show that we've got some more commitment, maybe some park and lieu monies to cover some of some miscellaneous costs. We're doing the same thing with the tennis courts. We think we threw in about $15,000, and that was sufficient to run over, you know, some of the incidentals that show up that aren't covered into the project itself. So I'm understanding you're concerned about getting this project started and not having enough funds to cover it.
Yes.
And we wouldn't start the project unless we had enough funds to cover it.
At this time, we have no allocation of funds, city funds, for this project. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right. And so to start forward on $1.5 million project, where in Resolution 1 it says sufficient funds to complete the project, I'm just concerned that we're going to commit ourselves to a project without having a funding source in place.
Well, we're not actually starting the work. The work on the project we've already started the master plan. So
right.
There has been monies allocated to right. this project. It just hasn't been to participate in programs here. The classroom will be utilized by the teens and other parts of the community. And we are definitely foreseeing other groups of the community coming and using portions of this site from time to time.
I know from attending some events down in Santa Maria at the Abel Maldonado Youth Center, it's open to all the community, and so I'm just wondering what direction this is going to go in regards to accessibility to, as a youth center versus just being limited to teens' usage.
It will be difficult to nail down the control points, but I think with a little bit of adjusting with some fencing and some guidelines where people are going to be going, pedestrian flow, whatnot, we'll be able to mix the usage with more than just teens.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else have questions on that one?
That raises a question for me. I thought the skate park was open to all ages. Am I wrong? Is it? Okay. So, but they don't have to access the youth center to get to the skate park.
Correct. The teen center is in the front, and the skate park is actually in the back on the side.
And it has its own entrance.
It will have a different entrance to it, yes.
Thank you.
And to follow up on Ms. Winholt's questions earlier via email for the teen center master plan, at this point it's a general master plan that was developed. This is for information in the community, developed by community participation and workshops and so on. And if we get the funding, then we'll go to a specific plan where we can vet out some more details about the project itself and the design components.
That's true. We will definitely get into a more detailed design plan that'll cover sustainable elements, green elements, control, usage, and those kind of things.
Okay. Any other comments? Carla, you want to make a motion?
Move to approve A3.
Second
to Betty. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. And A4, Betty.
A4 is a resolution to reduce parking and lieu fees for a property on the corner of Morro Bay Boulevard and Shasta. I wanted to take out a few words in the first, therefore be it resolved. I think there's a phrase at the end that can be deleted. In the downtown area for 5 years, I think, is not necessary. Not supposed to be there even. So I would ask that be deleted. Otherwise, the word is good. I'm still going to vote against this. I think it's, if not literally a gift of public funds, I believe it's in the spirit of a gift. The city will be out over $120,000 by doing this, and I think it's inappropriate.
And I'll be joining you with that vote again, mostly because my concern is we don't have a real good gauge or ability to control how those funds are reinvested in that space and the business environment there.
Okay. I'll move approval of A4 with the correction.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
3-2 with Winholz and Smuckler opposed. All right, and A5, Noah.
Yes, A5 is regarding the home program coordinator position, and I had some questions about that. You did just mention that we had our first successful project with the home program, which is really exciting. My concern, as you know, level of performance tied into the grant funds and whether they're going to actually cover this whole position or not. So I'd like a little elaboration from your side, please.
I'd be happy to. We participate in three grant-funded programs, Community Development Block Grant, Cal Home, and HOME. Our grant portfolio changes every year depending upon where we position the portfolio and what we apply for. In past years, for example, we've gotten funds for the fire station, the Bonita Street Fire Station. In other years, we've diverted that money to rehab programs. And the federal fuel ranking criteria don't always stay the same, and they kind of fluctuate between the different programs. I can tell you this. Per capita, we probably have the most grant-funded program per capita in the county. We're getting considerably more money into this community through these grant programs than, I mean, seriously, we compare favorably to communities like Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo because they fund through the county, which is a much more inefficient program. But basically, this position is the administrative position. If you may recall, when we created this, this position came out of the office administrator, and that individual took it upon herself to identify an expanded role of services that they can provide. But generally speaking, this position, depending upon the year and what kind of programs we have, and also the people that take advantage of the program, we've been trying to get the word out, but it really matters on who comes in the door and who actually income qualifies. And it varies considerably depending upon who we can get the word out to, who's interested, who actually gets funded. This was not our first home project. We've been doing those for quite some time. This is our first mobile home that we funded. So if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yeah, I'm curious to know how we can feel comfortable that these grant funds will cover this position, given that, you know, it depends on the performance of the grant itself and how many people actually will take advantage of this program. How do we know that that is going to take place and that we will be awarded the additional grant funds to cover the cost of the position?
Well, it is a competitive program. Funding for grant funding for this position fluctuates on a given year from 30% to 70%. That equates to their time. But I can tell you from on the administrative side, the only administrative support we have in my department is about 0.4 of a full-time equivalent. So this other individual picks up the balance of that. And that includes the support to the Planning Commission, to the Joint Public, the JPA with Cayucas, also the Public Works Advisory Board, and, you know, the board and commission support and publishing minutes, agendas, and so forth, getting out noticing, and those kinds of things. So in addition to their spare time dealing with who may hopefully walk through the door with our grant program, there's all the day-to-day stuff, like just picking up the phone, assisting the person at the counter, because the only other administrative person we have in my department is devoted almost probably 70% to water and wastewater collections. And that's the only other support we have. So that's why this is a critical function for the department. And a bonus, because we've been able to leverage these other important grant programs for the rehab program.
Betty, do you have a question?
Yeah, I have kind of a similar, but really my question is a little bit in a different vein. When I looked at all these obligations or responsibilities this person has under background, it's like you're talking 6 or 7 lines of responsibility here because they're covering so much work, because you're saying this is really the person in the office that does this work, and then on top of does these grant programs. So my question is this an impossible job?
Well, I'm sure.
And do we really need more than one person, because will we lose our grant?
In capturing other grant funds beyond what's already flowing into the community.
I think it caught my attention when you said the grant work varies, or the money for the grant work varies anywhere from 30% to 70%, but then I would assume time varies 30% to 70%. So it's like somebody's getting the short stick somewhere in terms of production for you. Either the grant's getting shorted or you're getting shorted on day-to-day work.
We try to find a balance. I wouldn't call it short. If there's something that needs to be done, we pull up our resources. There are other times when we've had our building staff helping. The building staff's actually very actively involved in this program. Mm-hmm. And we've got other levels of support within the office. I help out on these things. Mm-hmm. So, and the finance director does too. So, the city manager is involved in some of these things. So we go to where the work is, where the funding opportunities are, and we're thankful to be able to stay on top of it so far with the position approved, which has already funded your budget.
And so if we don't, you just have to really scramble in other ways, and that's pretty impossible, it sounds like, actually.
Absolutely. If we don't have this position, that will be a very noticeable change in the level of service, I mean, to the extent that it would affect our hours of operation.
Mr. Ambo, given that you do have this position and the success that we just had with the recent mobile home conversion, what do you think the possibility is of leveraging that success to future successes within that same program and really making sure we're achieving the highest possible conversion opportunities that we have?
The purpose in spending, we want to see product built. The purpose in the purpose of the program is to spend the money. So that's what is a priority. So it isn't for lack of effort or interest or want to accomplish those things. We try to do as much as we can. And it's a dynamic process. But in answer to your question, we're trying to get the word out, and we've been getting the word out. We've got, you know, we're doing good in the program, and I'm happy that we've been able to, hold it together with limited resources we do have.
And especially the recent success.
Okay, so this agenda item is to authorize filling that spot. Now, the person that we're filling the spot behind was LEED certified, right?
Yeah.
Now, I realize that you don't have to be, and let me back up just a minute. LEED certification requires a certain level of awareness and education regarding green building, and that encompasses all the things to do with it regarding solar, gray water, reclamation, building-friendly material, all this. And I realize it's not a prerequisite for this position. I'm just saying it was nice to have that expertise. So I would certainly encourage people that are LEED certified to go ahead and apply, although I understand it's not a huge endeavor to acquire this certification. But I would like to see someone in the building department have that, the latest knowledge and a collector of this kind of information, so we can keep our incentive programs going and stay on top of this. So. Like I say, I know it's not an absolute prerequisite, but I would encourage folks that have that certificate
and that they pursue that opportunity, including myself. So,
okay. Want to make a motion?
Sure. I'd move to approve A5.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, perfect timing. We'll take a short break, and we'll start with our public hearings at 7 o'clock. There we go. All right, we'll start with our public hearings, and first one is item B1, adoption of an ordinance adding a section to the Morro Bay Municipal Code establishing a local business preference program. Rob.
Yes, good evening again. This item is in front of you pursuant to your direction at the November 9, 2009 council meeting, where you reviewed a draft ordinance that would provide further clarification and importance on giving competitive preference to local industries and businesses doing business within the city of Morro Bay. The ordinance is attached. It grants a 5% business preference, not only just to the purchase of supplies, but also goes much further to services and other business that the city does. There are a couple changes, but I'll let Council Member Winholtz bring those up. I support those changes. Those were changes that I had missed. There was an inconsistency between shall and may, and then there's a definition of local business that I think is a good idea also. So with that, I'll answer any questions, but that's it for my report.
Okay. Questions? No? Carla? Rick?
Did you have one?
Just asking Mr. Schultz where he thought this definition should fall into the ordinance, at the end or beginning.
I would put it under H, where it says verification of local business preference eligibility.
Okay.
So it would go in after the first sentence.
Thank you.
Rick, do you have a question?
Not really a question, but I'd kind of like to get some feedback after this policy is in effect for 6 months or a year, and just let us know how it affects us fiscally.
Yes, we certainly can do that. And that's one of the reasons why I think Councilmember Smuckler wanted to bring forward is we do have a 5% business preference already, but it was very narrowly crafted and was hidden within another section of the ordinance. So hopefully now that it's out there, we've already put it in. I'll tell you where we've already put it in. We put it in the RFP for the sale of the trolley. So it's in that specific section. So that's going to be something of making sure that staff remembers now to really highlight it and put it in all, any RFPs or RFQs or anything else we do.
Okay. Anything else? This is a public hearing. If you have any comments on this issue, please step forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back to council. Discussion? Carla?
I just have a question on the addition that Council Member Winholtz had suggested. That was the one that you emailed us earlier about the tighter language. I just had a little concern about in there. I think it said they couldn't utilize a P.O. box. And a lot of businesses in this community use P.O. boxes, even though their business is here, because they don't get their mail in a lot of the storefronts. So,
well, it's just a matter of they have to have that. Some sort of proof of the location of the business,
right.
Not just a P.O. box address in Morro Bay, because anybody can get
so
that.
So then we're not going to accept that preference won't include somebody who's in Los Osos, Cayucas, right outside our city limits where we have no sphere of influence, but our Morro Bay, I mean, they're not residents then. Mm-hmm. So is that...
Well, that's the way it was proposed. So
no,
if you'd like
no,
to
I'm
see
just
it different.
No, I'm just
correct. That was just my proposal.
But if they operate their business here, if they offer services here in the city, mm-hmm. then that would be okay.
But then their address would not be a Morro Bay address.
Well, it's I'm sure it's going to be one of them.
Yeah.
A list of things that they
okay.
need to do just
okay.
to prove that they are a Morro Bay business. That's all it.
I'm good
it
with
means.
That. Then that's fine.
No.
No.
The way I have written this is you would have to be a business located in Morro Bay. In other words,
physically located, not just offering services.
Office Depot has a business license here. They do business in Morro Bay. They would not be entitled to this 5% preference because they don't have that. I was, at least the way I worded this, and my thought was they had to be a business physically located in Morro Bay.
So if you have a plumbing truck.
But that doesn't mean you couldn't extend it. You know, some of them said all the way to the county, even though it was a city ordinance, they wanted to make it within the whole county or within the neighborhood communities. So that's up for your discussion.
Well, that's something we should discuss then. How do you feel about that, Carla?
Well, I know we have a lot of exchanges in business with Los Osos and Cayucas, mm-hmm. And they are business. They do business in Morro Bay, or they're contractors that work in Morro Bay. But perhaps their yard or storage unit is in Los Osos. Or I comes to mind just somebody who does ceramics, but because they can't have their kiln here in the city because of our ordinances, they're in Los Osos. But you know, so are they going to be excluded? I guess that's a little bit of concern there.
Well, what if it's a business license and within a certain mileage circle?
That I would,
Bay?
You know.
How do the rest of you feel about
that? I would go back to Mr. Smuckler because he's the one that proposed this.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that larger sphere and community that we have within the entire county, actually, and thinking about similar actions that other cities or jurisdictions may take, and it would be nice if they included us in theirs. Initially, though, I think it would be good to keep this focused within Morro Bay specifically, and I like Mr. Grantham's idea of having a review period on this and talking more about potential expansion at that point. I'd like to see this get off the ground as soon as possible, and I'm not sure what that adjustment would do to our time frame as far as getting this going if we were to expand the sphere beyond just the city limits.
It could be approved tonight for first reading still. This is just a definition, so you haven't changed anything that requires further notice. And if you want, I mean, my idea is to leave it the way it is, which is just within the city. But if you wanted to extend that, it would just be within so many miles of the jurisdictional limits of the city.
What about like a five-mile radius? Because that would count Cayucas and Los Osos. It would not get to Home Depot, which, you know, that's then you're dealing with a great big chain, and that's not what we want to encourage.
That's true.
But does that limit us if 5 miles gets you over to the middle school? It doesn't get you to downtown Los Osos.
That said, I'm comfortable with including Cayucas and Los Osos because you're right. There's a certain overflow with our schools and our entire community. And if we have programs like this that enable us to choose local businesses over others that are residing here, that's going to help stabilize our economy and the people that work and live here. So,
Is it better to do it by mileage, Rob, or to just say Morro Bay business license, but they can operate out of Los Osos or Cayucas as well? Which would be more?
The easiest way to do it tonight would be a mile, which fits in easiest for me, at least, for located within 5 miles within the jurisdictional limits of the city of Morro Bay. If that gets us, or is it 8 enough and won't get you to San Luis Obispo?
Okay.
And you could do 8, and then I think you're sure have Los Osos and Cayucas.
All right.
Works for me.
So do you want to add that to your definition then, Betty, or somebody else want to add that? And
so do we need to, do we remove the post office boxes shall be used?
I still think that's important.
So we're going to add on to that.
Right. The only thing you would do is in that fourth line, business address located within 8 miles of the jurisdictional limits of the city of Morro Bay.
And are you saying 8? I thought I heard 5.
Whichever.
Okay. I'd like to make it more restrictive.
Okay.
I think the concern was just that we didn't want to cut somebody out.
Yeah.
But
out of Los
six
Osos.
Miles, whatever. Cayucas, I think, would be the Los Osos. But it's the boundaries.
Yeah.
Our boundaries, so it should be fine.
8 miles?
Yeah, that sounds good. It doesn't get you to San Luis.
Or
get you out to Cuesta.
Well, then reel it in. Make it 7. Won't get you to Cuesta. Cuesta doesn't bid on anything for us, though.
Yeah.
And the CCC's out there, so do you want to allow for them to participate in that? So you would want to put it that far.
So 8 miles.
Well, I think if we, because of the language here, within the jurisdictional limits, so if you're 5 miles, you're within 2 different jurisdictional limits. So I think 5 is a good number. And it still encompasses both communities.
Okay, as long as it encompasses them both. Will that suffice, Rob? Okay. All right, so somebody want to make a motion with the 5 miles?
I would like to make that motion. I would like to first amend on letter C on page 1 of the ordinance, that on the bottom line, the word may shall be changed to the word shall. And that number 2, a definition that I will hand to our clerk tonight, that reads, local business means a vendor or contractor who has paid its local business tax to the city of Morro Bay at least 6 months prior to bid or proposal opening date. Does business in the Morro Bay community by providing goods, services, or construction, and maintains a physical business address located within 5 miles of the jurisdictional limits of the city of Morro Bay and performs business on a day-to-day basis. Post office boxes shall not be used for the purpose of establishing said physical addresses. And that this definition be added into section H after the first sentence.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
No, it can be just post office box won't be allowed as, yeah. Okay, here for what, that one? Okay, does anybody mind if we go and take that one first so they don't have to wait through other things? Okay, we'll go to item B3, termination of agreement between Roanoke and the city of Morro Bay. And Rob, you've got the lead on this one.
Yes, I'm up again. This matter is in front of you. I'll give you a brief background and then open it up for discussions and public comment period. Basically, the city entered into an agreement that's attached to your staff report with Roanoke of God in 1982. Paragraph 1 of that agreement grants to the city of Morro Bay the right to extract water from well 9A. In exchange for the use of that well 9A, paragraph 6 of the agreement requires the city to provide free water service in an amount not to exceed 1,100,000 gallons per month to three parcels described in that agreement. The agreement provides that if any of the parcels are sold, the city will continue to provide water in the amount not to exceed 500,000 gallons, and the city shall be entitled to pumping cost for the water used. In addition, there's paragraphs 4 and 5 that are pertinent to this agreement, which provide Roanoke the use of boat slips on the Embarcadero and the use of approximately 5 acres out by the in the Chorro Valley that we own. We have, under this boat slips over the years, we did make an amendment and took those back. Really, all that Roanoke has at this point in time is just one mooring is all that's left. But if the agreement is terminated, then we would obtain that mooring back, and we'd also obtain exclusive use of the 5 acres that are out there, and they would no longer be able to use that land. The city is requesting city staff's returning termination of this agreement because we've had many water quality issues out there and the difficulty with the pumping of the wells. Certain of the wells currently are under cease and desist orders by the health department. So we feel it's necessary at this point in time. We don't have the use of well 9A to terminate this agreement. I will state, though, that termination of this agreement is not termination of service. There's really two properties that are involved out there, the Roanoke's property, and then there's a neighboring property right next to it. The neighboring property is the one where that clause came into effect, that it was one of the three properties were sold, and under the agreement we are to charge them the pumping costs of the water. We have never done that. Instead, we installed a meter and have charged them per unit. So in reality, the agreement isn't being complied with in that sense in pumping costs. The agreement also states that we're supposed to provide well water, and we can't always do that because we have restrictions on our wells. So the agreement has become really problematic and feel it's at the time to terminate. But I want to go back to what I said is termination of the agreement is not termination of the service. We feel that we've got to go back after the termination of this agreement and work on other ways to provide adequate and water to these two properties. And we'll try to reach a separate agreement, separate and apart from that, to bring back to you as to how that would be entailed. We've met with the one property owner. It's not problematic on the Roanoke property. There's plenty of land, and a well can be drilled on that site. There are problems. My speculation is that when the property was sold, charging the pumping costs was problematic because there's no way to differentiate the pumping costs from this from the other pumping costs from well 9A. And if you were to charge them the pumping cost of all of 9A, it'd probably be more expensive than the metered cost. So, and then you'd have to try to figure that out on a monthly basis exactly what the pumping costs were. So probably the scenario was the city felt it was easier just to put in a meter and read the units than try to figure out what the pumping costs for the property of that other property owner. So that's where we're at. I mean, it is a sticky wicket we've gone through. Dylan has, and Dylan's here, about all the problems we do have out there. We feel this is the first step to take. It gets us back to 5 acres. It does relinquish a well that's not needed anymore or isn't needed at this time, but certainly requires us to then go back and still try to figure out the water source for these two properties. So with that, answer any questions, and Dylan's here also to answer any questions.
Okay, I'll ask one question first. So cessation of the agreement or cancellation of the agreement just puts them into the category of another user on a monthly water bill, correct? And we don't have to have any other kind of agreement to do that because we're doing it with other properties out there as well?
Correct.
Okay.
And a follow-up clarification, the only interruption to that service would be in the times of state water shutdown, most likely.
No, there wouldn't even be at that time. I mean, we've figured out other ways to provide them water, even if that means providing notice that they might have a high concentrate of nitrate. But we've never, even during the state water shutdown, not provided water to the properties out there, and won't disconnect at that until we come back to you with a different plan.
Other questions, Rick?
Just one. So if we approve this tonight, the two water users and you have 120 days to hammer out an agreement that's satisfactory, and that agreement can be extended if it needs to be.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just a comment that I wouldn't support personally turning off anybody's water in the city or outside the city that the city provides to them. So I'm certainly willing, you know, to instruct you to do what you need to do to ensure these people get clean water. And I understand that the reasoning behind terminating the agreement is to ensure safe drinking water for all the folks in Morro Bay. It's a very complicated thing, but it involves our current infrastructure and our blending treatments and the Clean Water Act regulations that we have to follow. So short of terminating this, we'd have to put a water treatment plant out there for two customers. So I agree with doing this, but on the other hand, and I know you will be fair in your negotiations with these folks, so I'll trust you to do that.
Question, Betty?
Yes.
Yes.
There's a motion proposed for
us. Excuse me. There's a motion proposed for us under the recommendation, but I don't see where in there it guarantees that we'll continue to give the new service
without a new agreement. And that, I mean, from a staff standpoint, our worst scenario is to continue to provide service as we currently are to these property owners out there. But if, in fact, that's the only way to do it, then we'll provide you with what should be done as a new separate agreement with Roanoke or with the other property owner, at least explaining how the water is being provided, because under the current agreement, we're not providing it correctly, mm-hmm. and we're also allowing 1,100,000 gallons to the other one. So, you know, at least from a staff standpoint, if that's what comes out of this, at least the relationship between us and the property owner out there will be in a better position than it is now.
Okay. I have some concern because we haven't been giving the appropriate water with the appropriate price, that it seems to me that we either owe them water free or we need to give them credit or back use for what they haven't gotten. Is there some way we can build that into here?
Anything can be built into any agreement. I would say, first off, that neither property owner has been denied to use any amount of water that they've been needed to use. Mm-hmm. And secondly, my argument would be that it is possible that the property owner owes the city money because the pumping costs of 9A are higher than the unit costs. That pump costs quite a bit to operate.
But they've been paying a water bill, is my understanding,
yes.
And they shouldn't have been paying a water bill.
No.
And so do we owe them money for that, or we can credit them so their future water won't be paid for?
They were to pay the pumping costs. Once that parcel was closed, was sold, mm-hmm. the parcel was to pay the pumping costs.
But have we been pumping? I thought they got state water.
At times they've gotten state water. At times they've gotten pumping. They've gotten well water.
And we have records of that?
You've kind of hit the nail on the head in that this is why we're recommending terminating the agreement. It's a little unwieldy. They have, for the most part, received state water. Well 9A, in my tenure, has never gone into the system. Maybe a few gallons during a testing period, but we've never produced water out of well 9A that's gone into the system since I've been with the city. And we do have pumping records that go back by well, and so we could try to determine what amount we pump wells, but you'd also have to go back to kind of cost benefit of the water received versus the quality of the well water. The agreement says that they're to receive water directly from well 9A. We can't deliver that to those people because the water quality of well 9A is such that it would violate our requirements for safe water. And so we can't actually deliver the water from well 9A. And we haven't, I don't believe we've historically done that. So they've received, for the most part, the same blend of water that everybody within the city limits receives. During shutdowns or other periods when we're running the well fields out there, they've gotten well water from well 11A or well 16, but not 9A. So it is sort of messy and unwieldy, and you go, it's hard to say exactly what molecule went where and when. And
well, this is kind of my made-up idea, but it just seems like kind of a fairness thing that if they were could have or should have been receiving water, they didn't know it, we didn't know it, they would have been charged pumping costs, but they weren't getting pumped water, but they've been paying a bill that they shouldn't have been paying because da-da-da-da. So I don't know how all that works out, and maybe that's what really gets negotiated rather than done here. But it seems to me that there's something that's unbalanced that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I would say it's very fair to sort of reconstruct that history. We could take a run at it and try to figure out sort of the economic value. I'm sure that you could, you know, how do you want to ascribe value to the various components of the agreement? It would be a challenging process. Our thought is that you go, really, at the end of the day, the most important thing from staff's perspective is that you go, we can't continue to provide clean, safe water to all of those people out in the Chorro Valley without making sort of some significant infrastructure investments. And so if we can't provide good, clean, safe water to drink, we have very limited options as far as what we can do in a home. But a homeowner has more options than we do because we're a public water system. And so you go, if we can't provide them good, clean, safe water, we have no business sort of doing that. And so that's why we're recommending termination of the agreement, is that resource, it was a this-for-that agreement, right? We were trading some water back to them for the well water that we received, but we're no longer receiving that benefit. And so we're recommending that we change our future business practice.
Well, as far as going back in time, I'd have to disagree. I mean, number one, if there was a concern from the property owner that they weren't being charged properly for what they were getting and they'd prefer to be the pumping rate or whatever, then that's something that they should have brought to the city. But there hasn't been any complaint. We've been providing them with better water than they would have gotten from the well. And I think that to take the time to go back and try and reconstruct how much it would have cost a pump versus how much the state water costs versus what the meter rate was is an exercise that we really don't have the personnel or the time to go into or the need. They got water. That's the point. They got water at the same rate that everyone else in the community did. And I don't think that's unfair.
No, but they should have gotten their water free or with a different kind of rate attached to it. And so my concern is, and it may not even be their concern, but my concern is how can they complain about something that they didn't know about, which was not disclosed because we, for whatever reason, that didn't happen. So at this may not be the time to talk about this,
okay,
but I'm bringing it up as something that I'm concerned about. Dylan, and maybe it means
okay,
nothing to...
Dylan has something to say.
Sure. Real quickly. Typical practice is that you go, water service outside the city limits is charged at twice the normal rate, and it hadn't been in this case. So I don't know kind of the history of that, but that's basically the way that our code reads. So there may have been some consideration that you go, regular rate is the pumping. You just can't speak to
and
that.
And that's what we just need to know.
And both city staff and the property owner, and I believe this, both didn't know until the middle, the end of the last quarter when we really started looking at the agreement that it included this other piece of property. I don't see that the property owner is in any different position that they were from a year ago. They didn't believe they had an agreement with the city.
Yes, a couple of, process questions. You mentioned that you're working on a meeting with the county, and that is definitely really important to putting together the puzzle here and coming up with something that works for every party. When do you anticipate that falling into these negotiations? Is that near on the horizon, or are you expecting that to be further down the road?
Margie, my assistant, is setting up the meeting right now, and we hope to have him within this month.
Great. And then as far as these negotiations, how do you foresee the council being involved as you come to different points with the negotiations, and how would we be able to review the agreements as they come forward?
If it's an agreement, say with Roanoke, where we give them notice of the termination, and Roanoke says, okay, that's fine, they go to the county, they obtain their permits for their well, and they don't ask the city for anything in return, it wouldn't come back to you. If Roanoke says that they want to be reimbursed for their well drilling or they want something else in return, now that they're no longer on the city, or they want to do something with 9A, because 9A, if they're going to pump from 9A, my understanding is, you know, you'd turn that pump on for probably 5 minutes, and you'd supply the entire needs of, you know, a home in 5 minutes. So you need some storage for the whole day. You see what I'm saying? So you'd need some modifications to that pump system if they were going to use that, now that we're turning it over to them. So if anything of that type agreement, it's coming back to you. And that would go for the Burtons also. If their answer to this is, okay, thank you so much, city, for everything you've done, and we'll be fine without you, which I doubt will be the case, but if they were to say that, then it would not come back to you. Any type of negotiations that's anything financial or anything of a nature that requires our involvement will come back to the council. That's how I see it.
Kaya, questions?
No, I'll wait for comments. Thank you.
I have one more question, Madam Mayor. Mr. Schultz, regarding Roanoke itself, we terminate this tonight. Is it done tonight, or does it have a lead period? I mean, it has the 120 days lead period.
Within 120 days, yes.
And so at that point, you stop giving them the million gallons, or however many gallons that is, they're going to continue to get that even though we've passed this tonight. They'll get that
for the 120 days. And within 120 days, we have to have a new agreement with them.
And if the agreement isn't resolved, then I think what we're saying is that we're going to continue with service, but will we continue giving Roanoke that much service?
No, I would not think so. I would think at the minimum, we've got to start making them pay for it. So at a minimum, there has to be a meter, but I don't want to just hook up a meter, so it would come back to you as an agreement. Even the simple, and under your scenario, no agreement, nothing's reached in 120 days, it's either going to come back to you to continue that 120-day period, or an agreement at the minimum would say we have an agreement to install a meter and start charging them unit prices. Mm-hmm. But our scenario from a staff level is to negotiate for them to provide themselves their own. They can't use.
So that doesn't matter if it goes past 120 days. This ends.
But at 120 days, we may still be giving them water.
Of a different sort of nature, but not via this agreement.
Not per this agreement.
Period.
It's a little bit more problematic because there's no meter. At least I understand there's no meter on. No, there is a meter on Roanoke. So, you know, but I believe we can have an agreement in 120 days.
But lacking an agreement, they would just both be metered customers.
Yes.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this subject, please come forward.
I'm Carrie Burton. I'm the other property owner, and I didn't know about the agreement. When I bought my property, trust me, if I'd have known that there was a lease attached to a commune, if there was contamination underneath my property, and if I'd known that the water service on the meter that's connected to my house could be disconnected at any time, I would not have spent $650,000 on my property. The lease did not come up because it was not disclosed. It was not filed. It was not recorded with the county. And as a city, I'm not saying anybody currently here did it. Anybody knows that when you have a lease or a contract with a city or a water utility or a water diversion for any type of use, it needs to be made public record so people don't spend $650,000 and are now looking at this mess. It's not right. As far as my water bill, when I bought my house, it says City Utilities. I had no idea about anything else. I paid a water bill. It says units. It has a meter read. I've had no idea about anything else. So this is all just a great surprise. When we read the lease is basically saying that, my property was landlocked. Okay? So I've done all my investigating. I'm not trying to fight this. I'm trying to make it work. But I'm also looking at property value because all of this mess that I didn't know about when I bought my property and my husband worked his tail off to pay for is now has to be disclosed if we go to sell it. What does that do to my property value? It's not pretty. And there is solutions. But if you do switch me over and say, okay, fine, we're going to provide you water, but, you know, throw the little dig in that you're outside of city limits so we can charge you more, or your pumping costs would be more, or you might owe us money more. That's not okay. That is not cooperating. I know you guys didn't start this problem, but you guys as a city, I would think, as human beings, would want to solve it and make it fair for everybody, and that's all I'm asking. I went ahead and I contacted my title company and said, look, you know, this property is not worth what I paid for it now, especially with the contamination. So I think there's a lot of issues that need to be gone over. Not only how are you going to provide 11 of us water, there has been past practice. You guys have supplied it. There was deals. It was voted in. There's articles from the 4-H when you guys gave them water. So there is a history behind how and why we got water. And that's basically to take the water out of the Chorro Valley, supplement the town, and then give us the state water, and everything would be fine, and the creek would be running fine. Well, nobody expected the contamination to get this bad. So now that the Contamination Water Quality Control Board, and I did speak to David Licaro, will allow us to do that. Now, also, if you guys have driven out to my house, you know I'm about 10 feet away from 3 failed septics of Roanoke and some illegal leach fields. So my boys don't need to drink that, and it's only a matter of time before that water is going to go bad. So how can you guarantee me that if I make an agreement and say, fine, we'll use my well on my little teeny 1 acre, how are you going to guarantee me that in time it's not going to become sewer contaminated?
I've let you go on because there's not a lot of people here, but you really
need to wrap it up. But that's just what I'm saying. So there's a lot of things. I have racked my brain trying to come up with solutions how I can get my own water. I understand the city's position.
Okay.
I understand you want us off, but we need help here, and it's not black and white.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, my leg went to sleep. David Nelson, resident of Moore Bay. I read this lease on Roanoke, and I called Rob Schultz about it months ago. And, you know, not taking into account this poor lady's condition here, I didn't understand that part of it. But, you know, it wasn't a good lease. And, you know, I called Rob and said, how do we get rid of this lease? Because I saw it as a big loss for the city. I don't see our water in that such a plentiful supply that we can supply a commune outside of our city limit with this amount of clean water. Now, this is the first time I've heard this story about her predicament, but I would go to my title company and sue whoever you have to sue to, you know, justify this. And, you know, it's a terrible position to be in. And, you know, if they're not using huge amounts of water, I may not have a problem with Rob rewriting some sort of an agreement. But what about all the other ranches out there? Are they going to come and say, hey, we want some deal too? And, you know, I mean, do you say no to them? I mean, they have polluted water. This water was polluted by somebody, and nobody kept track of who did it. You know, the prison was guilty of pumping a lot of raw sewage down that valley on numerous occasions, and they were fined by the state. Now, nobody, including the city, tracked that to see if they polluted. That was our water. That was a good deal if we could take all the water out of there and run it through our plant, our desal plant, and get water out of it. But in the condition it's in, it's doubtful. So we should have taken, you know, again, hindsight's a great thing, and we should have been there to figure out who was polluting this water. And, you know, Well 9 became undrinkable a long time ago, from what I understand. And, you know, we should have been on top of it, and we weren't. And, you know, terminating this agreement is, you know, totally justified by the city. I don't see why it's not. And I hope that we can work out a deal. But, you know, I don't think we want to be selling 1 million gallons a month of water to anybody at this point other than cities. I think we use 1,500 gallons in my household, 2 units, I think that's right, is 750 gallons a unit. So, you know, that's a lot of people's water that we're going to send outside the city when the city can really not afford this. So, you know, like I say, 1 acre, I assume they're not using that many units. May not hurt the city, but, you know, there's, and let's make this right. And but getting rid of the lease is a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Mike Burton. I'd like to bring just a little comment to something that Rob Schultz had said, that regarding us, we're not in much of a worse situation than we were a year ago, not knowing about this agreement, and now we know about it and having something taken away that we didn't know about. If I could let you guys all, if you all live in the city of Morbay and you all know that you have a water meter outside and an agreement with the town of Morbay that you're paying your water bill, as long as you pay it, you're going to have water. When we bought our property 5 years ago, we're getting water from the city, and that was our assumption. Now, recently, we find that we have this agreement, and we're being told by the staff that that is the agreement that's giving you water. If we'd like, we can take your water away. That's a pretty shocking deal. If you own a house in town and somebody tells you they can take your water away, you'd be upset. That's shocking. That's a tremendous deal. So hopefully, if this deal is canceled, it's not something that can come back and bite us in the butt and say, well, we tried, but we just can't make an agreement. And because we put our pipes in the ground, the city of Morbay, in a way that they knew when the agreement was made, there's no way hydraulically you can pump the water from 9A to those houses. It's in an 6 or 8 inch main, and it goes right into a 12 inch main, and that main goes to town. It's not plumbed to any house out there in that area. So when it was made, it may be written one way, but it was, the pipes were already in the ground, so the city knew how that water was going to leave that well and where it was going. So all I'm saying is that is the only agreement right now that we do have. So if you take that away, please be considerate and not shut the water off on us 4 months down the road saying, sorry, that's just the best you can do. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Millie Benson. I live down the road a bit from the Burtons. I just want to show you that they're not here alone. I live on Kinney Road and have for 40 years. My family's been there a bit longer than that. My grandmother originally had a contract with the county of San Luis, and they pumped water from Morro Bay for about 60 years from her property, quite a substantial amount. And that well no longer pumps, but 11A was on my uncle's property, the Romero well. And now that one still pumps considerably. I don't think they're going to shut it off, like someone has said recently, but that's on another owner's property. She's not here tonight, but our two properties are rather small, so we can't put wells on our property. But it seems like it would be rather strange to hear that well still pumping and pumping the water out from underneath our land and us not having that water supplied back to us, especially after the years and years that the water had been supplied to us and after the years that the water had been taken from our land and supplied Morro Bay. I mean, and it's going to continue to develop. Now, if you think we're not going to need more clean water, that's ridiculous. Of course we are, and not just for the 11 of us. And it's going to get more intense that we're going to need this clean water. So, I don't know. It's not just 11 families that this is impacting by a long shot. So.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. I know this is a very, as Rob said, it's a sticky wicket, and certainly the last thing we want to do is have people without water. We just realized that there is a problem here, and now we're trying to find a way to solve it, and hopefully it's going to be fair for everyone. That would be my goal, certainly. Comments? Noah?
Yeah, definitely hear the concerns from the residents out there, especially regarding the service and the water supply. And from tonight's conversation, it seems clear that we would not discontinue service until there is a positive agreement between the community and the Chorro Valley residents, and we would not leave people dry. At the same time, looking at what the community of Morro Bay is facing with our own personal water supply, I think we need to move ahead with this tonight and really put faith in positive above the well negotiations that we can feel good about at the end of the day. And I hope we are kept in the loop as far as the council's awareness of where the negotiations are going, and that we look outside of the box with some of these solutions, because ultimately this question challenge is a worldwide challenge, and there are some really interesting water supply options out there that could help address the issue without tapping further into the groundwater there, or bringing in water from an outside source. So I hope we consider those as we go forward, and I think we all realize how serious this is. So we're going to do so in a really honest way is the real challenge. And I know water's a tough thing to remain honest about.
Carla?
I can't see without them. I know that it's been mentioned a couple times by some of the residents and was just mentioned again about potential future development, but part of the problem for us as a city is that we have no sphere of influence anymore since the county took that away, and so we don't have the ability to have oversight out in the Chorro Valley in regards to usage, and their unpermitted septics and those things are not issues that we can deal with. They're county issues, and so, you know, that responsibility falls on the county and not the city. You know, this was brought to us when I came on the council last year, and I was looking through emails that date back all the way to February of last year when this started, and it was because the neighboring residents out there next to Roanoke wanted their water usage stopped because they were getting water from the city and using it in a manner they didn't feel was fair in this.
Betty? I think it goes beyond encouraging, since we'll be the decision makers on that contract, that we need to see to it that that's how it happens. I think it's important to honor the history of how this, of where we are. The date on this agreement is 1982. None of us were in charge at that point. None of the staff were in charge at that point. So whoever was at that point, this is what worked for the Valley people. They had lots of water. The city needed water. We did an exchange, and I think that was the honorable thing at that time. Now that things have shifted because of the contamination, we need to continue to honor that we have been able to become a city that's larger because of their water, and that they chose to share that with us. And so I think that that's real important. I think that... just to comment about growth for a second, we don't have a sphere of influence and we can't control what's going on there, so I'm excited that we're going to have some conversations with the county because they need to be stepping up to the plate and they haven't. At the same time, we're at a population that's approximately 10,000. Our growth can go up to 12,000. That's all within our city boundaries. So we can still add another 2,000 people, which would require, I think, some more water. So I think this is a continuing issue about that, and that once we get these leases settled, not just this one but the others, I think we're going to have to address cleaning up that basin, or the county's going to have to address cleaning up that basin, or we're going to have to work together, but we can't leave it polluted. And so I think that was a good point that was made this evening. If we're going to close this out tonight, we have got to amend this motion that's written here, that we state that we will not term it, that water service will continue and that, and I don't hear people supporting the idea that maybe that service continues for free because of past action, but I think we need to research the past action. Again, that motion may not pass tonight. So what I would suggest is, unless you want to make comment, Mayor, I'll make my motion later.
Okay, I would like to comment. Question, Rob. Why would this not have been recorded? I mean, that's standard practice, isn't it? Why would it not have been recorded, and where did you find the agreement?
The agreement's been in our file forever. When I came on in 97, one of the first issues was the use of the 5 acres and had to find Roanoke in default and send out notices to that. And then an issue came up on us actually doing an eminent domain on well 9A. And then the agreement came up a couple other times on defaults and stuff. So it's just always been in my Roanoke file to begin with. But it's, as far as I know, it's never been recorded. It doesn't have a recorded stamp, but I've never done a research either. And I certainly believe the property owner, it's not on their property. It could have been recorded just on Roanoke's property. I've never done a title search to see if it's on their property. It's always just been an agreement since I've been here between us and Roanoke, and didn't involve the other property, because when I came aboard, there was no issues that came up with that property.
Because it is frustrating that the title search would be, we need to maintain them as a city customer until such time as we come up with something else.
My only reason for suggesting that is it was the city fault, and that we owe that to them if that was our fault. And so I'm just trying to make amends. I hear that you don't want to do that. I don't know that the rest of the council does either. But I think that needs to be acknowledged, that it was. In the past, it was the city that didn't do the recording.
But it didn't cause them any hardship. I mean,
well,
as far as water, receiving water. And the only thing that you could do is talk about the cost of receiving water.
Right.
So and they got it.
And I understand that. They got the water, but did they get it under a fair circumstance?
Mm-hmm.
And that's my concern.
Okay. So we disagree on that.
Do you have a motion that you've got written out, or do you want me to make one?
No, go ahead.
I move that we direct staff to terminate the agreement between Roanoke and the City of Morro Bay pursuant to paragraph 9 of the agreement. And I think I'd like that explained, which means it will terminate in 120 days. Can I add that? Yes. Which states that it will be terminated in 120 days. In addition, water service will continue as is. Beyond that point, until a fair settlement is reached?
I wouldn't agree with the as is.
Okay, right. What do you want it to be?
Well, just not water included. Service. Water service
will continue.
This water service will continue.
Well, the way
beyond the 120 days if negotiations haven't been concluded?
The way it was phrased, as we discussed, it was no service disconnection without an agreement.
Okay. So, in addition, there will be no water service discontinued?
Yes.
So there
until
will be
there
no,
is a new
there will
agreement.
Be no discontinuation of water service until a new agreement is in place. How's that? That okay with you, Rob? Okay.
It's good with the providers, with the people being served.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
But the point that was raised until service is being okay. So say it again for me, Mr. Smuckler.
There shall be no termination of service, or that there should be no discontinuation of service until an agreement is reached.
Until a new service disconnection without a new agreement in place.
Okay.
New agreement.
So are we clear on the motion? Are we clear on the wording? Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, Carla seconded. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you. All right. Do we need a break, or can we go on to B2? We have some staff waiting for us there. All right, we'll go on to item B2, which is our annual water report. And this is Bruce and Kathleen.
Yes, ma'am. Good evening, council members. I'm here to present the annual water report pursuant to Ordinance 266. And this report describes the uses that have received water equivalent allocations in 2009. and provides the department's recommendation regarding the building allocation for residential units and the suggested mix of multifamily and single-family residential units for 2000, and the water production data as well as historic and overall historic water production rainfall table. We'd like to note that there appears to be pretty much status quo as far as all these tables go, sort of across the board, same as last year and the year before. However, we would like to note, and have done so also in our motions here, that there have been recent changes in state water deliveries, and so we are making a recommendation that the water supply portfolio be reviewed as part of the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan update. And this review will address both the decreasing amount of state water being delivered and the reliability of those deliveries. And with that, we'd just like to make the recommendation that you make the following motions, that move that the City Council grant the following allocations for 2010 and key subsequent actions on water supply issues to the forthcoming Urban Water Management Plan update. And one is allocate the mix of residential units as 60% single family, 40% multifamily, and authorize the corresponding water equivalent allocation residential uses at 50 WEUs, and process residential allocation limits on a first-come, first-served basis based on the priorities contained in the current general plan and local coastal plan policies, and authorize allocation of 130% of the residential water equivalent units, or what would be 65 WEUs, to commercial industrial projects within the priority categories consistent with the current local coastal plan and general plan policies. And finally, review the water supply portfolio in light of the recent decreases in the reliability of state water project deliveries as part of the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan update.
Questions for Kathleen? Anyone?
Just for our knowledge, I don't have our future agenda timeline in front of us, but when would you anticipate us to review the Urban Water Management Plan?
I've checked with Dylan. With looking at getting at that in, say, August, probably about a solid month or two of drafting, and then we would be looking at getting at it near October, November. Public review, comments.
And another clarification, as we talk about the water supply challenges that we have, the term short-term challenges was used, and I'm not quite sure what that means, and if you could elaborate on that.
Well, absolutely. If there's any interruptions in deliveries, we would bring that to your attention immediately. They've indicated they've curtailed the deliveries significantly, and we just want to be nimble and responsive to changing conditions. In terms of just the wet water use, we approved 3 or 4 units last year, so we're not. I mean, in terms of day-to-day operations, I don't expect to experience a severe shortage, but we are quite aware of the general outlook of our water supplies, and that's what we will spend more time looking into when we develop the Urban Water Management Plan.
Other questions?
So short term means like in the next 2 years, beyond 1 year probably?
And so you go, this year is certainly sort of in the short term, this year we have a particularly difficult water supply year ahead of us. But that doesn't mean that from here forward we're going to have particularly difficult water supply years. And we'll look to that document and include that document and those projections in our 2010 Urban Water Management Plan update. And sort of at that time, it's an appropriate time to really sort of look globally and think globally and figure out long-term with our water supply, what do we want to do, where do we want to head, based on what state water is doing. But what we don't want to do is have sort of a knee-jerk reaction and go, you know, let's stop those 2.2 WEUs from being allocated this year because of the current situation.
And Mr. Wade, a question, or actually a statement. When you and I were at the workshop last week, county had that we were using 140 units, and we see in this report that it's only 120, 122.
Correct.
And you're going to clean that up with them.
Yeah, I've got one of the 20 messages I had over the Christmas break was from the guy with the county, and so I'll call him and get that cleaned up.
Mm-hmm. And then my last question, Mr. Ambo, in light of the fact that there is such little building going on, how are you reallocating our building inspectors and what they're doing, or is there other work that's going on?
Well, what we've done is, for example, what I mentioned earlier is how we've been kind of adding other things on. The building technician is actually handling all the business licenses. Mm-hmm. And then the inspectors have actually taken on a broader role, more proactive role, in picking up on code enforcement. And we all are trying to stay ahead of, you may recall we did the climate action plan. And there's a lot of programs and policies that have been set into motion on that whole continuum of programs. And I'm trying to allocate our staff resources ahead of those things so that we can help guide those in the direction that all of our policies are pointing at in terms of sustainability, energy, and the environment. So all of us are trying to keep up on those things. And that in and of itself, in addition, is fairly active. Changing regulatory environment with water, wastewater, and stormwater is keeping us on our toes without inviting new stuff.
New stuff. So it's a little bit of a silver lining extra, quote, extra time to do some other things.
Or unfunded mandates, if you will.
Yes, yes, to take care of those. Thank you.
Okay, this is a public hearing. Do any of the staff that are out in the audience want to come? Okay, we'll bring it back to the council then. I thought it was really interesting looking at the historic water production and rainfall that, I mean, sometimes there's good things that we're doing. In 1970, we had a very low rainfall, 9.84 inches. Our population was 7,100 people, and we were using an average per capita of 193 gallons, I guess that is. And here in 2009, we had 12.25 rainfall, a population of 10,500, and we're only using 120. I mean, that's amazing that we have dropped our usage, 73 gallons per capita. I mean, that's really impressive. And I just want to say thank you to the people of Morro Bay because you are listening. You do know we have an issue here, and you are being careful. I'm not saying we don't have to be more careful, but sometimes there's good stuff that happens.
I'm not... judging with the track record of our water equivalency units and the applications for those over the last couple of years, I'm not too concerned that we're going to see a major expansion of those in the next year or so until we review our water management plan and update that. So I'm not sure I necessarily need to go as far as not allocating those tonight, but I don't like to hear us say that this is just a short-term issue because it obviously is not, especially given the challenges that we have with our local water supply portfolio. So I want to make sure that we keep that in mind and don't start to relax this effort.
Any other comments? Or I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve B2.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. Anybody need a break?
Yes, please.
Okay. We'll take a short break and come back with our following items. Back to item D1, and this is a discussion on water quality testing in Morro Bay's drinking water. Dylan.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and members of the council. Griff, before you tonight to talk about this. This is one of the subjects that, you know, we could talk for hours and hours and hours, but I'll try to summarize it and keep it brief and sort of gloss over the boring intricacies of some of this. So that we don't put anybody to sleep. Really what this is, as I understand it, this was a council-requested action item that we come before you a little bit and talk about what we do for our water quality testing. And I wanted to sort of, in your staff report, you have a general overview of our practices and procedures for water quality testing. And then also to talk a little bit about emergent contaminants, pharmaceuticals, and personal care products. And so you go, my discussion tonight will sort of focus on that front, even though that's not where most of our work goes on a day-in and a day-out basis. So I'll kind of leave the staff report with you to talk about day-in and day-out activities, and then we'll talk a little bit right now about pharmaceuticals and personal care products. So water quality basically is regulated for both water consumption and then also our discharges are regulated. So our wastewater treatment plant and our desalinization plant have a discharge. Those are regulated under the Clean Water Act, and that regulates point source discharges to the waters of the United States. It does not regulate residential septic systems or non-surface water discharges. The other important thing that we're talking about, and what we'll focus most on tonight, is sort of the other process, is the Safe Drinking Water Act. The Safe Drinking Water Act has a risk-based approach. It sets primary and secondary treatment standards, and it may specify certain treatment techniques. And that process does consider cost versus benefit as you look at setting rules for what contaminants are allowed at what level in the water. How is our water quality regulated? Well, we're regulated by two different departments. We're regulated by both the EPA and then also by the California Department of Public Health. So the EPA basically sets rules, and there's the Safe Drinking Water Act, and then there's a whole number of rules underneath that Safe Drinking Water Act. The EPA also serves as sort of a clearinghouse for 1,000 chemicals that are out there, and they say these are the chemicals that could potentially contaminate drinking water. In that process, they pick every few years, they pick the ones that they perceive to be the greatest public health threat, either because they're so sort of toxic to human beings or they're so prevalent that they're seen as being the largest threat, and they go through and review those. They take their testing information, and they decide whether or not to regulate any particular contaminant. So there's this formal rulemaking process that the EPA goes through to sort of, in theory, you're trying to winnow down and make sure that you're covering the worst of the worst and you're regulating the things that need to be regulated, and that when you regulate, you're focusing in on those things that matter most to protect the public health and welfare. So that's how the EPA gets involved. EPA then turns authority over to the California Department of Public Health, and that's who we sort of report to on a day-in and a day-out basis, and we provide them with, we have discussions back and forth about our particular system and get into more specifics. But CDPH, California Department of Public Health, can't let us off the hook of anything that the EPA requires, and in many cases, they're actually more stringent. So you sort of start out globally with the EPA, then it winnows down to the state of California Department of Public Health, and then it steps down to actual our water department. The important thing for the average resident out there to pay attention to and to think about in water quality, I spend a lot of time working on water quality testing. We do testing every single week. And during certain periods of time, like, for example, during the state water shutdowns, when our operation's more dynamic, we'll go to daily testing at certain periods of time. So we're constantly testing and monitoring the water quality that's coming into the city and then also the water that's in our system and that's being delivered to our residents. And so you go, for the average resident, though, there, once a year we mail out, in about July of every year, we mail out our consumer confidence report. So here's a picture of last year's. In that report, we summarize kind of everything to do with water quality. So if we've had any hits, if we've found anything in our water that's potentially harmful, we report it at that time and through that format. And so that's a very sort of key component of what we do, and that's important for the residents to pay attention to. If they have water quality questions, that's really your best and first place to look. And then beyond that, staff's also available for questions. So then the question pops up, what about sort of the pharmaceuticals and personal care products? There's been a lot of media attention to this subject in the last few years. And you go, what can we do about that? What do we know about that? And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that tonight as well. Emergent contaminants can broadly be defined as synthetic or naturally occurring chemical or microorganism that is commonly monitored in the environment but has the potential to enter the environment and cause known or suspected adverse ecological and or human health effects. And in a lot of cases, these are things that are already there. In some cases, they're things that we're adding to the environment. So why are they called an emerging contaminant? That's what we often refer to as pharmaceuticals and personal care products. Well, there's been recent advances sort of in laboratory treatment and detection techniques. And so you go, while things may have been in the water and in the environment for the last 100,000 million years, we just now are being able to detect things that we could never detect before. And so what's happened in the last few years... And during recent testing out in the Ashurst nitrate study, we actually used pharmaceuticals and personal care products as an indicator. So that was one of the lines of evidence that we used to try to figure out where the nitrates were coming from. As we said, well, is it wastewater from CMC that's causing this problem? And so we actually dove in and looked at that. And what we found isn't very surprising in that there are trace concentrations of pharmaceuticals and personal care products in the water in the Chorro Valley. We can say that for sure. We did some testing. So here's what we tested for. Acetaminophen, carbazine, a whole bunch of different substances. We went out and hired a specialty lab to do this. It was fairly expensive. It was, I think, the University of Iowa is actually the lab that had the ability to do this. None of our local labs could. But we looked at this line of evidence, and we found I can't even pronounce these words. I think you need a medical degree to do this. But you go,
Do we have that chart, Dylan? Do we have that chart in our packet?
No, you do not.
No, okay.
That is found on the Internet in the Ashurst nitrate study. So you can find that on the city's website if you type in Ashurst. Rick, go ahead.
When was this tested for?
This was tested in, you know, it's been a heck of a year. I'm going to say about a year and a half ago. So probably, 2008. Yeah, probably summer of 2008 is when we did this, or end of 2008.
You know, I can't see that very well, and I'd like to be able to.
October, okay.
Like to be able to compare your list with my list that
sure.
I wanted tested. So is there a way that I can get that in front of me?
We can.
Well, yeah. So yeah, we can get direction.
What we could do, we could either pull up. I mean, I don't have a hard copy of that with me right now. I just have it on my presentation. You can find it though on the website and sort of have that in front of you. But or we can take a look at it and kind of read off the different things if you want to fire off some of the ones on your list. But there is some overlap there. Because I remember the list you gave me from the county.
Are there antidepressants on your list?
I believe there are antidepressants. Carbamazepine, which is one of the ones that we found.
The one I'm looking for is fluoxetine, the most commonly used.
Fluoxetine we did not test for. And so this testing was done in 2008. It wasn't in response to sort of the recent request.
Rick, why don't you sit down there and just compare your list while he's giving his report.
Yeah, and I'll leave it on this slide for a couple of minutes. But before, I guess we'll just give Rick a couple of minutes to kind of grind through that. So we did find stuff. I mean, that's not a huge surprise, is that there are things in our source water that are based on basically human activity. There actually are very few pristine watersheds. I would bet that if we looked in the Moro Valley, where there aren't really sort of users upstream, there's no wastewater treatment plant upstream from us, we would find that there are also things in the environment, just from septic systems, from animal activity. So there really aren't very many. So 54 nanograms per liter, I just thought I would give you some perspective on that. A lot of people take Tylenol. So you guys ever taken one of the small Tylenols, the little round ones? That's a 325 milligrams. So to give you some perspective, the highest concentration that we found would be equivalent to taking one of those Tylenols, chopping it into pieces, and mixing it with 2.5 Olympic swimming pools. So that's sort of an order of magnitude discussion to kind of keep it in perspective, that we can measure these things at such low concentrations. That you go, we're just now finding them. So what does this all mean? What can we do about it?
Before you go away from that point, okay, it's a minute amount of each one, but when you put all of them together, I mean, do they interact with each other in negative ways? And what does that come out to be per billion? I mean, is it still minuscule?
It's still minuscule in that the amounts we measured, for what we've measured for, and we have very limited data in Morro Bay. What we have basically is what we collected as part of the nitrate study. But you go, certainly these things, as they occur, they change in time, they change in the season, they change with background uses of the watershed, they change with the geomorphology, the type of rocks. So these things occur in different concentrations sort of everywhere. And the question out there is, as you go, well, what does it do? And what do we need to do about it? And you go, really, the ability to detect and monitor these contaminants is fairly new. And we're detecting things at very low and small concentrations. So overall, what is the impact? And you go, overall, the impact of pharmaceuticals and personal care products in the environment and then subsequently in the drinking water, the health impact is unknown. It hasn't been determined. But it's believed by the experts that it's going to be relatively, that it's insignificant because they're such low concentrations. However, to say, but you go, well, what is your next best option? And you go, you know, well, you go, well, maybe I'll treat my water and get this stuff out. But the problem is that there's no sort of silver water treatment bullet. We have an RO system in Morro Bay, which is about the highest and best treatment that you can do. There are some advanced oxidizing techniques that we could talk about where you inject hydrogen peroxide or UV into the water, and that will oxidize some of these materials. But in that process of oxidizing some, you make some of them worse. And so you go, the jury's sort of still out there on these products. And you go, it's in time, the body of knowledge will be collected. They'll be added to the EPA's contaminant candidate list. The scientific community is working on this problem, and will develop sort of a knowledge and a data set to sort of start drawing conclusions about. But it's really too soon to tell. And then I'll just wrap up, and then we can kind of get in discussion and close it out. But where this is most likely headed is that you go, there are animals and things in the environment that are much more sensitive than human beings. And so you go, what's likely to happen is that the government will use the Clean Water Act to start regulating discharges. So where this is going to be more of an issue we do about it as a community right now, and you go, certainly there are options, but a lot of the options are radical, and we don't know at this point if the treatments are going to be worse than the original disease. So that's where I would leave it at this point.
Well, if I could, Dylan, to go back, the U.S. Geological Survey in 2002, 8 years ago, conducted testing over 30 states, 139 streams, and found measurable concentrations of prescription and non-prescription drugs, steroids, and reproductive hormones. And when I talked to all the experts involved in this, like Rick Lichtenfeld from San Luis Environmental, Department of Health, he says, you're going to find them. They're there. You're going to find them. These things are shown to have negative effects on fish, the environment, and people. I understand that even with tertiary treatment, the molecules of the pharmaceuticals are so small they pass through them, and so we haven't really come across foolproof treatment plans for this. But my in looking, you know, in doing what research I have on this, I was glad you tested for the carbonazide, which is the anti-epileptic seizure medications. You also tested for the ibuprofen, but I think we missed the boat on a few things that I would have liked to have seen tested for. And we here in what we are currently testing for, everything from acrylamine to trichloroethylene, which is a solvent it's a degreaser and that's very hard to get rid of. But a lot of these things, speaking of the pharmaceuticals, have half-lives that are very long. And when you have half-lives that are very long, they don't dissipate, and you get an accumulation effect that happens from them. So, you know, this is my concern, and I'm not saying that we can do a whole lot about it right now because we need better technology on how to get these things out. But by the same token, I think we should be aware to maybe get ourselves pushed to do whatever we can do to – it's just another part of the problems with water. And it's interesting, even, you know, with the infant 6 months and younger, with the high nitrate levels, you get the blue baby syndrome where the body, because of the immature intestinal tract, can't process these things and can't carry oxygen to the cells. And it's the same thing with animals. Newborn animals, it's the same deal. They have to get to a certain point where they can –
their bodies take care of these kind of things. But I would certainly like to see things like Lasix, the diuretics, anti-inflammatories, steroids, fluoxetine, Wayfarin, a few of these more commonly used things. Now, we get these through different sources. We get them because people ingest them for their health, and then they excrete them, and then we get people that dump used medications down into the water. So it's two ways that they're coming. There is a bill in the state right now. We're ingesting these things. As a matter of fact, there is a town in Minnesota that has a high selenium concentration in the ground, and nobody in that town has manic depressive disease. So in ways, you know, these things are in their own strange ways kind of helpful. But I really would like to get a clearer picture of some of these other high usage pharmaceuticals and see where our measurements are.
Yeah, and that I kind of came up with tonight's suggestions. We actually, in this county, were very close to developing a pharmacy take-back program through our waste management organization. It died on the vine for $50,000, to be honest. And you go, in my mind, that was a shame. So we were really close to sort of starting that program, and it basically withered for just lack of funds.
Yeah. Well, if I might, there are some pharmacies that if you get your medications through them, they will take them back. And there's one in Cambria, and I wish I had the name of it, that does take back medications from just about anywhere. And I'll get that name. But there's other factors involved. There has to be Food and Drug Administration has to have guidelines so that these medications are disposed with properly and that the people aren't getting them and then selling them on the street. Or things like this. So there's a whole plethora of things that they have to go through as far as paperwork and follow-up and where these things go. But I'm looking forward to the day when we do have a policy. I think it's really important, and I think we need to stress that.
And I would agree. And so if council wants to provide some direction, you know, we have a lot of testing that we do that's mandatory. The EPA hasn't touched this issue yet. I mean, we're really sort of and I don't think we'll get there quickly. I mean, to be honest, this is a topic that I can see for the remainder of my career sort of exploring and hedging out, and I actually think it won't even be resolved in my career. This is one of those things that I think as our detection abilities get better, it's going to become a bigger and a bigger concern. And you go, so, you know, what do you do about it? Well, you go, okay, well, I jumped a bottle of water. If you jump to bottled water, the regulations are even less than what's in your drinking water. So you're best off with your drinking water from a regulatory standpoint. You go, well, you could stop drinking water. You know, I guess you could go to alcohol or something, but you'd ruin your liver. So there really just aren't a lot of great options as far as what do you practically do to deal with this issue. And you go, and I wish I had great answers for that. But you go, it's really one of those things that the scientific community is really coming up to speed. We know that it's disruptive to certain wildlife species, especially amphibians, and you go, so you know that's out there, and you can assume that there's probably some health effect on people, but you go, you know, you can only live for 2 or 3 days without water. And so you go, your risk is do I risk someday dying of a cancer that maybe these things contributed to, you know, when I'm 110 years old, or do I stop drinking water? And you go, the fact is that public water supply is still your best bet.
Well, and not to give anybody a false sense of security, but a lot of times the bottled water isn't as clean as what the tap is, and you're going to get the same problems in bottled water.
Yeah, that we're actually tested to a higher standard than they are. So you go, as a large water system, the water that we deliver has to meet the highest level of treatment and standards of basically anywhere in the world. And so
it's very limited, so that's an interesting place to go when you're looking for as pure of water as possible. And I totally agree with Mr. Grantham's concerns And I'm kind of interested in a couple of things here. One, just along the lines of the things we are testing for, this is just for general awareness that most people probably already know, but as you look at the sources of a lot of these contaminants, you see that a very significant amount of these different contaminants are coming from things that we have available to us and off the shelf, including fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides. And there is a program that is a really good program that our miners here locally is participating with called Our Water, Our World, which directs people to alternative options for these different applications, such as fertilizers, pesticides, and herbicides that do not have that effect or are much limited in that effect. And it's an excellent program. There's labels within the different aisles, and I would encourage anyone who is shopping to pick up the items that are identified under the Our Water, Our World program. And a question I have is just generally is that that program has a really good website with an educational component. Is that something that we could connect to with our website just as overall awareness and encouraging our community to take a leadership role?
I think we are involved with that. I'll double-check, but I'm pretty sure that was one of the public education and outreach components of the stormwater management plan. And we've worked, I remember when the former person used to come out and stock the shelves at Miners with the information. I know we have some of that in our office, too.
I think you're right. I just want to confirm that. I didn't have a chance to look today. Another question that I have is, and from what I've been able to understand, we've done a good job within city operations of making that transition when we talk about cleaning elements and so on and how we're managing our facilities. But I guess I just want to confirm that we are doing everything to take that leadership exemplary role and making those changes that we really see need to be made across the board. Is that something that we can confirm? And if so,
Madam Mayor, part of our stormwater management plan, an important part of that is the municipal operations, yeah. And that goes across all departments.
Excellent.
So that's an important part of our program.
Okay. Good to hear. I just wanted to confirm that. And just out of curiosity, with the pharmaceutical take-back program that you mentioned, was that a cumulative program that was being developed within the county and that $50,000 was going to be spread across the board? And
it was the WMA was going to do it countywide. So it was a countywide program. What really never happened is there just wasn't the leadership there to push that through. There wasn't sort of a collection taken up from all the cities in the county to pull that together. And so it just sort of kind of withered and died. And I think it left a bad taste in WMA's mouth because they did a lot of prep work and got it to, you know, the finish line, and then it fell apart.
And how long ago was that?
That would have been, if I remember, it was late 2007 is when that would have been.
Because I just find it to kick it off and encourage the other communities in the county to do this, support the same sort of a concept.
Sounds like a future agenda item.
Yeah.
Okay. Carla? Just to address IWMA, since I'm the rep, we don't have a meeting this month. It didn't go away. It's an ongoing pharmaceutical disposal. Is an ongoing issue that they're addressing, but it has to be addressed most of the time at a state level, and there's a lot of mandates because many of the drugs that you're talking about are controlled substance, and so it's not so easy as just saying we're going to help fund it to get the program kicked off. It's not like the returns for the batteries and fluorescent lights and things. When it's controlled substance, you require a law enforcement officer of some sort to have to be at each drop site when you do the drug takebacks and all that because of them being controlled substance. Then they have to be shipped out as a hazardous waste issue. So it gets into a really long, drawn-out thing. So it's not as easy as just saying, you know, we want to support it. Everybody in the county, the reps that are there on IWMA, we have this conversation, and everyone is supportive of it, and it is something they realize that we're trying to deal with and has to be dealt with. So, before they go in the landfill.
So I do understand that. I guess I just think it's really important that we stay on top of that, and for you as our rep know that as a council, we really would like to help move that along as much as possible.
And I will make sure that when I'm there, I will bring it up and see where we're at, because they give us an update each meeting, and we only meet every other month, but they give us an update on where we are, and a lot of it comes down to the legislature and where they're at in and funding for things, you know, or the grant funding's been cut. So
I have a little blurb, if I might, from Public Health. It says, California Integrated Waste Management Board, via SB 966, has been working with stakeholders to implement regulations that will address the issue regarding collection and disposals. And they further go on to say that you might explore this with Bill Worrell at the local Integrated Waste Management Authority to see if their take-back program is in the works. He says, I think the integrated waste or the IWMA would be part of the discussion when the County Health Commission takes up the issue.
I had one other comment. This is generally, even though these are, as you're pointing out, identified in low concentrations, it's the concern of what is the cumulative effect of long-term exposure, especially for weaker members of our community, those just developing, and the elderly. We really don't know what the long-term effects are, and if you look at the rates of cancer and so on, and other diseases in our society, it's you start to really see a situation that could be affected in a way that we haven't even identified really the total cost to our society. So it's you know, it's really important we're having this conversation, and I appreciate Mr. Grantham's leadership in bringing this forward.
Thanks. Regarding what they're testing for now, if you look under the potential health effects from the long-term exposure, what you're talking about, most of them deal with liver damage, kidney damage, and cancer. And that's, I'd say, 90
stuff every year to test, or is this a separate kind of issue that EPA is going after?
No, there was a monitoring program that was being developed for the coast of California that I believe the EPA was participating in. So they were going to actually look at our nearshore marine environment and try to determine in the nearshore marine environment what things may or may not be there. I mean, you know, there's a lot of potential contaminants out there, and it's a real sort of judgment to pick what you look for and what you don't look for. And really, being a small city, you go, we're not leading the charge on this one. You know, it's not on the top of my priority list. I look to the EPA and to CDPH to really sort of lead that charge and provide us with direction about what to look for and when to look for it.
And I'm sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead, and I'll make my last
I was just going to say just one more stat that's kind of eye-opening. The United States of America has 4% of the world's population. We use 90% of the prescription drug use in the whole world. So it's eye-opening when you hear things like that.
Which leads into my last comment, which is we've talked a lot about there's stuff in the water and we don't know it all yet and that, but what we can do is be a little bit more preventative. And there may be a lot there, but we can keep it from being even more so. So in terms of fertilizers, like Mr. Smuckler mentioned, or drug taking, or whatever that is, that I think we need to understand that has a greater consequence.
Okay, if there are no more comments, this is a receive and file, so I move that we do that. Do I hear a second?
Well, what if I still have a few things I'd like to see tested?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
So do you want to make a motion?
Well, I have a list of about 19 things, but we've covered two of them. We've covered the carbazine and the ibuprofen, but there's still about 15 more items I'd like to see get tested, or at least find out what it's going to cost us to get it tested.
Okay.
And like Betty said, I think it's a great motivator for us to move on and support any kind of a take-back program with a lot of gusto. And not just us, but be an example for the surrounding communities and however many other people we could affect.
Well, does the rest of the council agree with Rick giving that list to Dylan, and as soon as possible we can add those things to the searches?
I would ask that we make it a future agenda item, and then that will – I don't want to just jump into that because the testing that we did do was phenomenally expensive and hard to sort of track down.
Okay.
And so, you know, there may or may not be items on the list that we could readily test for. So what I'd prefer to do is, if the council's amiable to it, is have Rick give me his list, give us some time to sort of track that down.
And then the costs.
I'm going to give that to you right now. And just hang on to it. I have a copy.
You got it. And then we'll bring that back once we sort of track down costs and availability, potentially even with one of my water updates. But we can certainly bring it back as a future agenda item for separate discussion if we need to.
And just for clarification, Mr. Grantham, are you thinking, again, in the Ashurst well field, or where would you like to focus these tests on the tail end of the water?
Can I tag in on that, too? If you'll allow me, I prefer to actually test our system because I do know that as we chlorinate or inject chloramines into the water that it's going to change some of these items. And so you go, I think it's...
Get an idea of local usage on the trolley and see if it had differed from the number that had occurred in another survey that was taking place in the year 2000. As well as looking for some feedback on fares as the fare structure was also being changed. The number of operating days had not changed from between 2008 and 2009 in terms of when the season started and when the season ended. The number of service hours on Friday and Saturday were cut back to 7 p.m. from 8 and 9 p.m. Because those hours were not very productive, and the council, in an effort to save some money on operating costs, chose to reduce hours for those 2 days. But other than that, the remaining service hours stayed the same. And the only major difference was in the fare structure. The city council took the adult fare and separated it into a child fare that was at a lower rate from the adult fare and that was different from the free category, which is really for much younger, smaller children, in addition to increasing the fare for the all-day pass. As I mentioned earlier, a survey was done at the request of City Council, and I'm not going to go through all the five questions and responses, but I'm going to hit on the two that were specifically requested by the council, the first being, which city or town do you live in? And of the survey respondents, about 300 surveys were made available to passengers on all three routes between June 26th and August 2nd, and 57 were completed and returned to the drivers. In terms of where a person lived, 9% responded they lived in Morro Bay, and this was a decrease from 15% in the year 2000 when the survey was performed. In terms of living outside of Morro Bay within Slo County, about 7%, with the most of those living in Los Osos. Then breaking it down a little further, for those living within California but not including Slo County, 67% responded, with the most living in Bakersfield and Fresno, followed by Clovis and Tulare. And then as you break it out even further, those who lived outside of California but were still staying within the United States and not within Slo County, 14% lived outside of California, with the most living in Dallas, Texas. And then we had 4% coming from Holland. Don't know what that was about. There was a family here visiting and rode the trolley and responded to the survey. In response to the question of how you felt about the $1 fare, 89% felt that the $1 fare was just right, and then 5% felt the fare was low, while another 5% felt that it was high. We asked a question on how much you would be willing to pay, and this was an open-ended question, so we didn't have specific targets as to the fare amount. 55 responded the dollar fare that is currently in place, 25 responded $2, 5% responded 50 cents, 5% responded whatever, and then we had 2% each responding $2.50, $1.75, $1.50 to $2, $1.50, and nothing. Tables 1 through 4 on page 3 of your staff report, spending that extra discretionary dollar on things. And when you look at a breakdown of the routes between 2009 and 2008, it's particularly telling. The waterfront route saw the largest drop by 29%, while the north and the downtown routes saw a decline in ridership of 7% and 11% respectively. So what this was kind of telling us is that those two north and downtown routes were really being used purely as more the public transportation, getting people from the campgrounds and in the north and south ends of the community into the downtown and to the waterfront, while along the waterfront was sort of more the tourist attraction. It's more the fun ride where someone who may have been at Tidelands Park and decided to pick up the trolley and take it all the way to the rock, they may now be walking that length for this year as opposed to prior years where they would have spent that extra discretionary dollar. As far as the fare box, because of the changes that were made to the fare structure, the fare box revenue actually increased by 40%. With that, what I would like to do is go ahead and turn it over for any questions or comments from the council. I would like to note that there's no budgetary information in here. The budget process for next fiscal year will be getting underway in the next month, month and a half. So really this was just looking at the ridership information from last year and not looking forward to next year. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. And the recommendation from staff is this is basically just a report, so it's receiving and file the report for 2009.
Okay, any questions? Betty?
I have a statement. I want to thank you for teasing out the weekends, the three major weekends, Memorial, Labor, and the 4th of July, and to note that that really didn't make a difference. I mean, it was within one or two people per hour. I thought that was interesting. So I guess what that tells us is that all of our weekends are pretty similar throughout the 3 months, or actually the 4 months, and that those major holidays don't really affect that much, except the evening of the 4th of July, of course. What I noticed among these statistics here, referring back to the council now, is that there seems to be an obvious drop, except on Saturday night between 6 at 6 o'clock, that things drop off at that point. And I would like to see us cut back even another hour in the evening on our service. And that Saturday night really would only, that extra hour would only have to extend to the waterfront. Otherwise, I think everything could be stopped at 6.
Are you talking about the 8 to 9? Time?
I'm talking about if you're looking at table 3 and you look and table 4 actually, if you run down between the 5 and 6 and 6 and 7 hour, you can see that there's a significant drop. Or if there's going to be a significant drop, it happens there. Between the 37 and 27.
And VSM?
Vehicle service miles.
Miles.
Okay, I'm just going to respond to Betty's comment. I think if those numbers were dropping off to the next number, the 4s and the 8s, I would say that, yeah, that would be something to do. I'd rather not do it until we have to, because keeping the service from 6 to 7 allows someone to go to a movie, something like that. They can go to a 4 o'clock show, get out at 6 and still get home. I think that knowing that this is being used by a lot of our locals as well as tourists, I'd hate to cut that back until we absolutely have to financially.
Financially, we do now, though. We had to dip into reserves to keep it going this year. Mm-hmm. So I think we're at that point.
Well, I think that I believe we're budgeted through this fiscal year, correct? Okay.
But aren't we budgeted because we went into reserves?
We weren't using city reserves. We were using the parking in lieu. So it's not. There was no general funds used for the trolley this year.
But that's money that's supposed to build parking lots.
Well, it has been determined that that was an allowable use, but it's not one that is going to be consistent from year to year as a guarantee. Mm-hmm. It would come during the budget process each year, and a determination would be made by the council whether that funding from that source it would be desirable or not.
Yeah, supplemental.
It's Janine, the trolley starts when back up?
Trolley starts at 11 a.m. on all operating days. And for Friday and Saturdays, it ends at 7 p.m. on Sunday at 6 p.m. and on Monday at 5 p.m. So in some of these, some of the tables on the breakouts, you see, like, for example, you have a 7 to 8 and 8 to 9. This would be when the 4th of July holiday is happening. Or on a Monday, you might have a 6 to 7, or Monday a 6 to 7, or a 5 to 6. That would be those Monday holidays, Memorial or Labor Day. So that's not, that'd be like 2 days out of the service season.
I guess I should have been clearer. I had the tables. I meant the startup of the season.
Oh, I'm sorry. The startup of the season is Memorial Day weekend. So we will have the end of May and the month of June.
Before new budgets.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, and again, in talking about when to cut it off, if this is being used by our visitors, then certainly we want them to patronize our restaurants and be able to get back to wherever they're staying. So I'd like to keep it going till the end of this fiscal year, as is. How do the rest of you feel, Noah? Let Noah's turn. Okay.
I have some concerns, especially as we look at the budget proposals coming out of Sacramento right now. It's there's still a lot of unknowns there. And some really, really concerning proposals involving Prop 42 and where our funds could end up from the state. So I think we all share a real strong concern about where we could be.
Kind of piggybacking on that comment, the city is participating in the transit efficiencies group that the Council of Governments had put together. Right now, we're doing an evaluation for a transit service plan for the Dial-A-Ride, and depending on what comes from that, there may be opportunities for re-evaluating and restructuring the trolley and how it's run, so we're not providing duplicative service that we may be starting to do with the Dial-A-Ride service. And so that is currently, this month is what we're looking at, and the target is in March to bring something to the Public Works Advisory Board and to the council and have a public workshop to get input on that service plan and any potential changes that might impact the trolley service for next year.
Okay. Other comments?
Just a question. Is the other trolley here yet, the new trolley?
We have a Recovery Act grant for purchasing a new trolley, and we did a bid process for. It's at Caltrans right now for review of proposals that were received, and I'm anticipating hopefully the first meeting in February to come to council with an award for that. The city also had received a grant for replacement of the 99 trolley, the 1985 trolley, and we did receive that, and that was put into service for this fiscal year.
Thanks. Anything else? Okay, this one is a receive and file also. So that's what we'll do. All right, item D3, evaluation for consistency with City Council policies and procedures, a letter sent to the Coastal Commission dated 12-8-09. And Betty, this was yours.
Yes, you'll find in the attachment the policy and procedures 5.4, and you'll find the letter sent by the mayor to the Coastal Commission. In the staff report itself, my contention are 2 points. That it was unclear who this letter was from, or who it represented, and that if it was choosing to represent the council, that was not really feasible because it was a different project that was being promoted rather than one that either this council or former council saw, and that therefore I took exception to the letter representing us. The mayor, as we all received an addendum with her response to my 2 comments, In there, she refers to a letter that indicates that that's the reason that we started this process or put the policy into our booklet. And what I did then was copy that letter just for your reference, Rick, if you'll take one of those and pass it down if you had a curiosity about that. My claim, I think, is that this was really...
Okay, Rick, comments?
Yeah, I have a question. Is
that okay?
Sure. Thanks, Betty.
And it's a four-part question for the city attorney. First of all, Rob, in your opinion, I know you've researched and been involved in the policy making on this particular issue. So my questions to you are, is there anything unethical? Is there anything dishonest about this? Does it adhere to present policy? And I guess it's only a three-part question.
The question of whether the letter fits within the policy is for your determination, not mine, to make. I will say, and I reviewed my city council meeting in 2007, I'd say the same thing. This issue comes up every 2 years. In 2007, staff proposed language that certainly would have cleared this problem up, and that is to begin every letter with the statement that I am writing this letter on behalf of the city council, or I'm writing this letter on behalf of myself as an individual. That language wasn't approved, and we came up with this language instead, which still gives some vague, wiggle worm as to whether, you only have to differentiate a personal opinion if it's contrary to a city position. So with this letter, I think when the mayor wrote it, what she was writing, she believed this was all still city position. Whether it was this council and other, it's still city position. And when I reviewed it, it was a very quick review of it, but I didn't see anything that wasn't the city's current position, which is in support of a conference center, and that's been the position of the city for quite some time since we did RFPs and other stuff. But, it's not my job to interpret the policies. That's your job. I don't represent any individual council member. But I still feel that ultimately there is a way to resolve this, and that's by putting that language in the beginning. Or, you can even go further. I think one of our staff recommendations is just don't use city letterhead unless all five council members sign it. That's probably the farthest you could go. But we seem to always have trouble with this, and every 2 years it always rears its head.
Well, I would agree even four-fifths of a council would be okay. If I write a letter, it's going to be from the desk of Rick Grantham, and there won't be any problems. But and I agree with the beginning, whether you're representing yourself or the council. And if you're representing yourself, I don't see where four-fifths is. But if you're representing the view of the council, I think four-fifths is necessary.
No?
Yeah, I found myself drawn to the 2007 decision and just curious as to why that wasn't passed. It seems like we ask the public or anyone as they make comments to us to identify what perspective and whom they're representing. And personally, it seems it only makes sense to me that we do the same as we comment on other projects. So out of curiosity, I'm interested in why. I think I just prefer we err on the side of being really clear when we do write these letters, and if there's something that we can do to make sure that every 2 years we're not going over this again, then let's consider doing that. And at this point, I'll just pass the mic.
Carla?
Well, I think I'm going to agree with Noah in regards to that. I'd certainly like to hope maybe we could get council support to do what wasn't done a couple years ago and have the letters starting out. Either it's my individual opinion as a council member or officially the council majority. The RFP, I would just like to ask that you said was supported the concept of this for that property was sent out specifically for a conference center, or was the RFP sent out for redevelopment of that lease, those lease sites?
No, I meant in general, the city has supported trying to get a conference center. I meant the RFP from across the street. So in general, the city has supported for, I think, what we talk about the chamber, but also the city as a policy has supported the need to draw a conference center in for quite some time.
But not specifically that
this
location.
Project, no.
Thank you.
Well, I'll take up the ball again then. I hear that there would like to be a change in the council policies and procedures in terms of adding a sentence to clarify these kinds of issues. However, that's not the issue tonight. The issue tonight is whether or not there was a misrepresentation or at least a lack of clarity in representing this council or the former council to the Coastal Commission regarding this project. And I think that's what needs to be addressed. I know it's uncomfortable to critique other cohorts, particularly in public, and that's why I think you'll find on the back of my staff report at the bottom of page 2, the paragraph that I suggested was this. While you have been an effective advocate for the city of Morro Bay, and this would be addressed to the mayor, you have chosen more than once not to follow adopted correspondence procedures. Consider this a letter of, and I gave options here, is it just a letter of counsel that we suggest that such action is unacceptable and depreciates the integrity of the council as a whole? We believe that you can easily correct this situation and assume that you are willing to do so. In writing this staff report, I suggested a title, and the mayor took it upon herself to say that that was not okay with her. My feeling is that the person that writes the staff report, unless it's an illegal title, it needs to be specific enough to where it describes the topic that we're talking about for the public. And she left off the last part and potential disciplinary response. I bring this up because I feel, again, that there's kind of an edge and that on occasion that's stepped over, and that kind of stepping over needs to not keep going forward, that here's the line, that this is my staff report, I get to do the title, this is your letter.
Frequently, I will correct titles or change titles on an agenda to better present the item. The particular item that you're talking about and adding the words disciplinary response indicates that there is a reason for discipline, and that has not been established. We're talking about a letter that I cleared with both the city attorney and the city manager. They both reviewed it before it went out. So to say that there is a disciplinary action there for my following that procedure, we would have to really change our policies and procedures before you can prove that I have done anything wrong, because under the current ones, I have not. Now, granted, you may think that my presenting it the way I did is not to your liking, but it was not against policy and procedure. Everything that was in that letter is something that had been established within our meetings, in approving the conference center in the first place, in allowing Bert Caldwell to continue with his bringing forward his precise plan, which this council did. So I did not say anything incorrect, and I did review it with the city attorney. Now, if you want to say that any letter that goes out has to say that the viewpoint at the beginning, I voted in favor of that 2 years ago. You voted against that, adding that language. So I'm fine with that. And if you want to put that in, great. That's how anything in the future would be handled. But to determine that there is reason for any sort of discipline right now, there's just not. There's not. And I beg anyone to tell me how there is.
I'll be glad to respond to that and to 4 of your points. The review by the city manager and the city attorney is considerate, but as the attorney said a minute ago, this is not their determination, it's our determination. regarding the title, you notice I put in potential disciplinary response. I did not say that there was. Certainly this wouldn't even be here if I didn't think there was some cause, but I did not make it an absolute. That's for this body to decide, not for me to decide. And in terms of your changing titles of agendas, I believe if you look in the procedure manual, which I did not think to bring, I think it says that you get to set the agenda, but it does not say that you get to correct titles. I think that's a liberty that you can take unless someone calls you on it, and I'm calling you on it. I think if you go through some of the language here, and I think I guess I could just actually read my report, but mention to you where I think that some faltering happened. It would start with a discussion. When the term "we" is used in the second paragraph, is it referring to the participants, the organization, yourself? And here you're talking about the Bird Festival, and I'm not sure how that represents the council. In the third paragraph, the use of the term "we" seems to represent the council, and so I agree with you there. In the fourth paragraph, it seems to be more talking about the "we" being Mr. Caldwell or yourself rather than the city or you together. So, because as you say in your letter, Mr. Caldwell changed it substantially after talking with the Coastal Commission. So it's real hard for me to have you going to Mr. Sajian, a Coastal Commission person, or writing a letter to the Coastal Commission and saying that. And I'm not even sure what you're, my feeling is that you're implying that you're representing us, but I can't tell that. And so,
all right, well, I think that we can talk about adding that wording to any letter that goes out from the council. That's fine. If you want to critique my writing, that's fine, but it's not something that has anything to do with policies and procedures. And I admit it, okay, a couple of the pronouns, maybe I could have done those better, but it's not against anything that, I mean, I didn't tell any lies in this letter, I didn't make any false statements, and I don't think there's any reason.
Well, if you were representing us, you were, because you can't represent us, because this is not a project that we approved. This is not a project that the past council approved. And my feeling is that you're trying to present it with your signature above the title mayor, that you're presenting this as a council city position.
And I disagree with you.
And I object to that.
And I disagree with you.
You know, when reading over this, most of these things I'm reading are factual truths. If you look at all these bullet points, they are facts.
And let me just remind you that it's not the bullets that I disagreed with. It's the front page.
Okay. I think we can always learn from perceived mistakes or mistakes. If I ever get a letter from a city with city letterhead, it's implying that it's from the city. And I see that. However, I don't think this goes to the level of disciplinary action. I think rather than that, we learn from it and put in that wording. I think that's very important, that this is from me, it's my opinion, or this is from the majority of the Council of Morro Bay's opinion. But I think those need to be spelled out, because when you do get a letter on city letterhead, it's a little intimidating. And you get the feeling that it represents the city. So in this case, like I say, I don't think it reaches the depths or levels of disciplinary action, but by the same token, let's learn from it and try to make it a little bit better.
Okay. Any other comments? Go ahead.
All right. Well, I think this session we just had is can be considered a counseling session to a large degree, and I'm not sure really where this official letter would take us. I'm assuming that, and I know I would if any letter written from me to to an outside body from here on out would recall this conversation, and I think that's a counseling effort that we've just undergone. I do agree with Mr. Grantham. We need to move forward and make this clear because it
was using me as a council member included in the comments that were made, and I didn't appreciate it being done that way. Had we had an opportunity to see it ahead of time or been asked, then maybe I might have felt different about it. But we weren't, and I agree with Noah, and that I think this discussion has hopefully resolved this from ever happening again in the future by all of us and future council members. And
can we make that motion to change the policies and procedures tonight, or does that have to be a future agenda item?
No, but I can bring it back in 2 weeks.
Okay. I'd like to add that wording, that we have to state it in the first paragraph of the letter.
Madam Mayor, we had talked about reviewing the whole Council and Policies and Procedures book anyway. Mm-hmm. Is that something that we just can't bring back as part of that discussion,
rather than
separate it out?
If you'd like.
That's what I prefer, to look at the whole document. Okay.
And I would agree with that, since we've had other questions about signing of documents and other things.
Okay, well, I'm going to say another thing for the record, though, that I did not do anything here that I felt was against city policy nor against council decisions. The interpretation that you have may be different, but in all honesty, I did not feel I was doing that. And if I did, I certainly wouldn't have copied you all with it. So, okay.
We can read it online.
Moving on. Future agenda items.
We have one more staff report.
I'm sorry?
We have one more staff report.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, we have to elect our vice mayor. Okay, this is appointment of a vice mayor to serve a one-year term. And we did change our policies and procedures to say that the any council member who has not yet held the position shall be appointed vice mayor, and if there are two council members who have not held the position, that the council member receiving the highest number of votes in the most recent election shall be appointed vice mayor. That person is Noah. So I would take a motion appointing Noah the vice mayor.
Second.
Okay.
Motion?
Yeah, I'll make the motion.
Second.
Okay.
Could I have some discussion?
Of course.
I am honored to take that position. I realize it's mostly symbolic and doesn't involve a lot of extra effort, although replacing you in the case of absence is definitely important. Although personally at this moment I'm going through some issues, and I do have a lot of other responsibilities that I'm building into for the city, and so I'd actually request that we, if Carla's willing, appoint Ms. Borchard as the vice mayor, and that I would follow up with her in the following year.
Well, is that agreeable to the rest of the council?
And well, actually, Mr. Smuckler and I have had this conversation, so we agreed that due to his scheduling and things he's taking care of, that it would be easier for us to flip the role this year and him take it next year. So.
All right. Well, I'll withdraw my motion then. Want to withdraw your second?
Sure.
Okay. And I'll move that we appoint Carla as the vice mayor for the coming year and Noah the following year.
Second.
Okay.
Discussion? I'll say that I agree to that. I think it's the exception to our policy, but we're doing it publicly, and we're in agreement. You've already discussed that, and it works for you, and so I'm fine with that.
Mayor? Yes. I think it's an interesting discussion, because when we...
Do we bring forward appointments, and there's two kinds of appointments, those that are done in the county that are made by the mayor and those that are done within the city. And traditionally, as long as I've been around, we've always published that list. It was one list that included both kinds of appointments. This year, the mayor chose not to make that an agenda item, to publish that list for the public, which is fine, I assume, because it's your choice, though I think it's kind of leaving the people out. But the part that I will object to and that I want to agendize are the four committees that are appointed within the city, because that is not your decision, as you know. It's this council's decision, and I'd like to have those positions come forward so we can decide if we want to continue with everybody as they are. And, in fact, I had made the request that I'd like to make a bid for the JPA, and that alone should have triggered bringing that forward. So I'd like to agendize that for the next meeting, if there's support for that.
All right. In response to that, I will say that it is my one of my few responsibilities to appoint people to the county boards, and rather than go through the public argument that we have every year, it is my right to do it, so I did it. As far as the other committees, what I did was I sent an email to each of the council members asking if they were happy with their positions, and four of us are. You are the only one who is not, and so I would suggest that if four of us are happy with our positions, there is no reason to bring that back.
And I apologize. I actually misinterpreted that email, thinking that it was focused on our countywide appointments. And I'm willing to have the discussion about the internal city appointments, and actually would support that item. I think it's important that we continue that process for the public's knowledge, and in the case that there is a decision on the majority to adjust those appointments. And I realize that catches you off guard, but I didn't realize that you were referring to both.
Okay, I made it pretty specific, the second email that I sent. But okay. Carla.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity for us to do that. I didn't understand either when you asked that question, so I would certainly support Noah that and agree with Councilmember Wenholz that if one person is weighing in, I feel out of respect for the advisory positions within the city. That being said, one person didn't agree, and I think maybe we just misinterpreted. So I would be willing to support that as an agenda.
Which are the ones that you'd like us to bring back?
The four in-house ones.
Which ones are the JPA, the mobile home? I can't.
Grievance.
Like the homeless and the NEP?
No, the NEP and the homeless would be county ones.
Okay.
So the only
There was a list that was, I don't know if it came from Ms. Looper or from Ms. Peters,
right.
But whatever the total amount is.
Okay.
It may be three, it may be
the
four.
The subcommittees that are city subcommittees will be brought back.
My second agenda item is our cell tower issue. The moratorium expires this summer. That's only 5 months away. I'd like to look at that in light of that we just had a hearing on it a couple of weeks ago.
I think what Councilmember Wenholz is saying is that what is the process to pull that out of the herd and make sure that staff understands that this needs to be completed by the summer when our moratorium expires, and if that means directing staff to process that as a separate amendment to do that.
Okay.
Is that...
That's it. And in addition, there may be a little alteration because...
Yes.
Because one of the discussions at the planning the other night was, for example, one of them was our current ordinance, even the new one, does not require, I don't think, shading or...
Screening.
Yeah. And one of the commissioners and then the others joined him and really pushed that needs to be part of what we're about, particularly on a scenic highway.
Okay. Well, I don't think we have to discuss it now. Are people in agreement with bringing that forward? Yes.
Is there three?
Yeah. Okay. All right. You had a third one?
I think that's it for now.
All right. Rick?
So these in-house appointments we're talking about, is that going to come back to the next meeting, or is that just going to go on a future agenda planning?
We'll put it on 125. Put it on the next meeting.
Next meeting. Okay. And what Dylan said about the pharmaceutical testing being a future agenda item, I need to make that official and put that on.
I'll support that.
Mm-hmm. I'll support that.
No?
Oh, no?
Anything new?
No.
Carla? Okay. Neither do I. So if there's nothing else, Carla has our closing quote tonight.
To accomplish great things, we must not only act, but also dream. Not only plan, but also believe. Anatole.
Thank you. And with that, we're adjourned.